that's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm back in the rugby dungeon once again, as we have been for over 10 years now. 10 and a half seasons, very nearly, we can say. I'm Tim, in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello, Timothy.
Yes, he is OnlyFans ready, shoe and sock free, but he's wearing jeans today.
I am.
It's very a different look. I think your OnlyFans fans will appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so.
And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
You alright?
I'm okay.
Look at Jay. Look at the way he's reclining now. Not like Kate Winslet in Titanic.
Yeah.
You're manspreading.
I am very much manspreading. Why has that triggered me into a memory of something? Never mind. I'll come back to it.
Being accused of manspreading.
No. Someone said something. There was a clip or something about manspreading the other day. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, I think I've seen the same clip, but I can't.
I can't point my finger. No. It's really annoying me now. Never mind.
Right, lots to talk about, including the second round of the Champions Cup and lots of other rugby stuff going on besides, and a bit of local rugby as well. And we've had some great emails, which you can always get in touch, contactedchasers@gmail.com.
We've had some good emails this week, actually.
We have had some really good emails. You can also find JB on LinkedIn.
You can find me on LinkedIn.
And lifting on Instagram.
Doing lots of lifting on Instagram. LinkedIn's wonderful. Honestly, like the...
You're one of the few people I've heard say that.
Yeah, because of how you use it. Like, so if you're on there, you know, trying to sell things and DM people all the time, trying to sell various bits and pieces, it doesn't work. But actually, for the podcast, it works really well because the quality of interaction is so much better. So much better. So you can leave it. And also, none of the neckbeards that do blogs and whatnot who populate Twitter and make it so toxic, they're just not there because they're not serious people. So it's much, much better.
And I'm also going to give a shout for the YouTube channel as well. We're on YouTube. Egg Chasers Rugby, and I say that because there's some account or something that just publishes these end of year lists, and I'm into the top 25.
Oh, really?
Of rugby YouTube accounts.
Have that.
Fair play.
Have that.
I'm not happy there. I'm looking up.
Well, I mean, your top natural one. Place would be number one, wouldn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. To which I'll have to beat World Rugby's 1.5 million subscribers.
I can see you doing that.
Yeah.
Honestly,
in time.
Current trajectory.
Do you know, with World Rugby, nobody really subscribes to World Rugby thinking, I can't wait for updates from this channel. They just do it because they've got a bunch of historic games or something, or historic coverage.
And they've monopolised all content and shut anyone else down from sharing it, which is fine.
Good, they own it.
That's one way to look after your content.
We're not letting anyone just take this podcast and own it.
Well, there is someone who just takes and uploads our podcast to YouTube.
Best of luck to you, sir.
Which is ridiculous.
Well, he obviously understands talent.
There you go. So, yeah, Egg Chasers Rugby for that as well. But a couple of local derbies. Do you want to hear about some of those?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Okay, one local derby here. Andy Rathbone has got in touch. He said yesterday, so this weekend, was the big National 2 derby between Redruth and Camborne.
Ooh, that is nice. A big one.
Two proud Cornish clubs, 4 miles apart, with lots of history.
Wow.
And in the same league for the first time in 34 years.
Oof.
Yeah.
It was 19-19 at the end, and there was a crowd, which is, the according to the BBC, is between 3,000 and 3,500.
Wow.
Love that.
That is
Love
something it. Else, isn't it?
Do you know, I know I've said this before on the podcast, but the derby, which I've never really spoke about, I've never experienced it, but I know they had huge crowds, was Kendal against, what are they called?
Penrith?
Wharfdale, Kirby Lonsdale?
Kirby Lonsdale.
Ah, okay.
Kirby Lonsdale, yeah.
Okay.
So I heard they got 3,000 to that, and this is about 5-6 years ago now.
Wow.
Apparently, it was a great atmosphere, and fixtures mean that each week, only one of those two teams is at home, and the other is away, guaranteeing good crowds every Saturday. And he says, on a separate note, I'm way behind the curve. Oh, no, blah, 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 blah. That's a different point. He says, finally, I coached the infamous Dominic St. George for a few seasons before he went to Eton and grabbed Tim's balls. That was, I had a Berkshire trial at under 16 level, and the other number 8 on the opposite team for like East Berkshire. I was the West Berkshire number 8. Dominic St. George was the East Berkshire number 8 from Eton. And first ruck, he just came and grabbed my nuts.
Nice.
As a power move. Or that's just what they do at Eton, I don't know.
Might be both.
How, maybe. Where did Joe Mauler go to school?
And this one from Richard McCowan, or McCowan. I hope I'm saying that right, Richard. Anyway, he said, contact jchasers@gmail.com. He says, pod, good, blah. A mention for the mighty Leamington Rugby Club, who won what could possibly be the closest geographical derby this weekend against old foes, Old Leamingtonians. Both teams steepled in history, the club separated by a singular farmer's field. And it was Leamington who came to the fore, winning 38-13.
So I don't think that is the closest two clubs. So I think the closest two clubs might be Northwich and, what are they called? Winnington Park.
Winnington Park.
Because I'm absolutely certain their fields are literally backed onto each other. There's like a field which is sideways, and then it goes, so the posts, I'm sure, are like perpendicular to the Winnington Park main field, if that makes sense.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure of it. It's literally a stone's throw. Literally a stone's throw.
That's very cool.
We've also got like ground sharing, like Richmond and Scottish.
Richmond, Scottish. I'm sure there's some. Actually, in Bristol. And you were in Bristol for a little bit, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
You've been down to Dings Crusaders?
Dings Crusaders, mate, yeah. Great club, mate.
I played for them once. Played for them twice, actually.
Proper club.
So, where Dings Crusaders were, do you remember? This is going back 20 years or so when I was back in university. There's like Bishopston, there's Dings. And
Cleve.
Cleve, yeah. And they're all on this enormous field, right? Yeah. This huge, huge field. And each one of them has their own porter cabin, effectively, as a clubhouse.
A branded porter cabin.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. And we used to play our freshers games, I think, at Cleve or whatever it was. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. One of those clubs. And every single weekend, there was at least two or three brand new, freshly burned out cars. Every single weekend, without fail.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. Any news from the under 16s this week, Tim?
Oh, big Lancashire Cup weekend.
Oh, who was playing?
Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under 16s against the current holders of the Lancashire Cup, Preston Grasshoppers.
Oh, Preston smashed them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they might have thought they were going to, but 15-10 win for the
boys. Oh, there we go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Low scoring.
A well-drilled defence.
I tell you what, it was. We were just sharing a clip on our coaches' WhatsApp group. There's one tackle when one of our guys gets absolutely obliterated. It's basically a speed bump for their hooker, who's a really good player. And just he had a good 10-metre run-up and just smashed him. And our lad got flown backwards. But the guy carrying the ball knocked it on. And it was funny. You used to sort of watch our lad. He gets marmalised, bounces straight back up, and has a big hug with his teammates.
Yeah!
Awesome.
Have it!
Love it.
Are they fully scrummaging now?
Yeah.
So there's no restrictions on what they can do.
No.
Line-out lifting is all good.
Line-out lifting. Yeah. Full competition.
Are there any differences in laws?
I think the only thing it changes if the scrum wheels, it's not turnover.
It's not anyway, no.
Is that right? At senior level?
No, it's not been that for a few years.
Has it? Oh, God, it shows how long I've not been playing. Because that never happens at like top-end level, does it? The number eight has picked it. Because they feed the ball so blatantly. The ball's thrown straight to the number eight's feet.
That might have been one of the successful law changes. Because it's illegal to wheel a scrum. I don't know if you know this. And yet you get rewarded with a turnover.
Well, again,
so by getting rid of it, it doesn't wheel now.
As Phil has talked about many times, there are so many laws in the law book which just need to be deleted. Like the whole feeding into the scrum is in the law. And rather than be a stickler for saying, oh, scrum half should put the ball in straight, which you always get a referee on a Saturday afternoon at like third team level who will do that. Just take it out because no one bothers anymore.
Yeah, no, you can't take it out. It should be like slightly straight. That's what it should be.
Well, then you've got to have the laws written to reflect the way that they're applied. Would be my thing.
Hookers do not get rid of. Yeah, hookers do not hook.
They do.
No, they don't.
Do. Occasionally they do.
Very rarely.
No, they don't.
It goes straight to the second row.
Yeah. No, it does. No. Honestly, I've hooked recently.
No, I'm talking like top level.
Top level.
I have to watch it.
Not level six, but like international rugby, hookers don't hook.
And the in the laws, your shoulders can't be below your hips in a ruck.
Yeah.
And you either got to take that out or you've got to start applying it. You can't one have the two things going on at the same time.
Well, talking to Broughton Park, my friend Dell from Broughton Park sent me a quick text today asking me to give a shout out for a good friend of his. And I've read what his friend is up to, so I thought I would, if that's okay with you boys.
Yeah.
So, Ben Eddy, Walk for Doddy, he is trying to walk 300 miles, so that is Cornwall to Kent, 330 miles.
I mean, he really should have done 500 miles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Come on.
When I read this, I was disappointed. I really was. In 3 weeks. So he's currently raised over £3,000. So that is walk for Doddy. Today they went to Exeter and they walked around in the budgie smugglers all day. So pretty good effort.
Good effort. That is on
Just Giving. And yeah, go well. Enjoy it.
Well, we'll talk about some good efforts in Exeter in just a second.
Oh, yes.
But I think before we get there, I think it's only right and proper to... Now we've had 2 weeks of the Champions Cup. I'm eating humble pie and saying I'm completely wrong. Are you willing to apologise and say you're completely wrong about the quality of the Premiership relative to other leagues?
I don't know is the answer.
Well, let me give you some stats before you make your mind up, Jay. Total points achieved by teams from leagues, URC... 20 points. URC teams have achieved 20 points in the Champions Cup so far. Top 14 has achieved 35 points in the Champions Cup opening two rounds. The Premiership has achieved 56 points, more than the other two leagues combined.
Interesting. It's certainly something to think about.
Conclusive evidence, surely.
Well, no, because
this is home games and away games.
No.
Weak teams on both
sides.
I
tell you why I'm not convinced. Because no matter which way you cut up these points, one indisputable fact is the Premiership is being drained of talent and has been drained of the talent, and these squads that they're fielding are still not as strong. And that is a fact. But there are other things which might be giving the Premiership a really competitive advantage.
I think I disagree with you. And we said it on our podcast, and then all I heard last week were... various. I'm not saying they listened to us and then repeated it, but all I heard was the point being made again and again and again. It's not good that the three teams went bust, but the three teams that went bust has lifted the standards of everybody else because they've managed to get really good players at knockdown prices.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Cheap talent has helped. It really has helped. Bath would not be the same team if they didn't have Ollie Lawrence,
Alfie Barbary, Ted Hill. I know he's not playing, but yeah.
Yeah, all these guys made a huge... even someone who's not actually a mainstream player for their club yet, but we spoke about him last week, Chandler Cunningham himself. There's so many examples of good... I'll tell you a great one.
Shilcock at Leicester.
Shilcock today was absolutely outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. So, yeah, undoubtedly, it is only a temporary fix. And the Premiership has already lost a lot of talent. So they were lucky in a way because they've lost the same quality of player, like Joe Marchant going to Stade Francais. All the guys that were paid a lot of money had gone, and then as soon as a load of other guys come on the market who they could get cheaper, they did. But this is a temporary fix. I would put more... I'd give more credit to the fact that all the Premiership teams, except for Newcastle, who are not trying and are freeloaders at this point, are spending up to the cap. And every week it is competitive. And because it's competitive, you've got to really coach hard. Nevertheless, I'm pretty confident in saying this, which is, although we're good in the group stage, when it gets to the real business end, I do think there'll be a separation between those teams in France and in the URC with the absolute top talent, and then the Premiership.
Well yeah, I don't disagree that Toulouse... Toulouse are going to be...
Although La Rochelle might not even make it now.
Exactly. I don't doubt that teams like Toulouse, and probably Leinster will get a bit of mojo by then, and will demonstrate what they're about to a greater level. I don't think there's any debate there. However... I think we thought, if you imagine the overlap between the top 14 and the Premiership, we were thinking the top of the Premiership was only maybe halfway up the top 14. And I think the overlap is much smaller than I thought it was.
So who's the best team in the Premiership? Let's say Saracens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Saracens would be about halfway up the top 14. With their salary structure, with the amount that they can spend on players. Now, if you take that Saracen structure and give them the French salary cap, I bet they could win the top 14. But it's that constriction on talent, I think. But...
Well, how do you explain the last two weekends, then?
Well, if that is the case, if the restriction on talent has... Yeah, if that is the case, surely the answer would be to constrict the salary cap even further and get rid of more talent.
Well, it depends what your objective is. Yeah. If your sole objective was an English club winning the Champions Cup, you would just have one English team.
Yeah.
You would just put all the talent in. You'd effectively do like the Jaguares did for a few seasons.
Like the Black Lions are doing for Georgia, who got a good win, didn't they?
They did.
Away in Scarlets.
That's not the objective of the RFU.
No, it's not.
The talent thing is definitely right that talent has left the Premiership. It is definitely right that a significant number of very good players and also a significant number of kind of solid players, above average Premiership players, have been redistributed. You've probably had, I don't know, 15 players from last season leave the league, but you've had 90 players redistributed across the league, of which probably a good 15 or more are equally talented to the ones who left.
And I'd suggest that those players being redistributed has also meant that the wages of everybody has been suppressed. It's like the opposite of deflation of salaries, which helps all of the clubs.
Yes. Now, that is going to be counteracted by next season, or the season after that, whenever there's a £1.4 million salary cap increase coming from 5 to 6.4. That will just have the opposite effect, because every player will be saying, well, let's make the math simple, I was 10%, I was on $500,000 a year, I was on 10% of the salary cap. Now I must be worth 640k because I'm still worth 10%. Like, that's the argument every player and agent will be running.
So look at Bristol, right? Bristol are a great example for me about where the Premiership gets it right and wrong simultaneously. Bristol, when they were good because they were one of the few teams that could just spend up to the cap and didn't care how much they spent on Charles Pietau.
Yeah,
they
two marquee players.
Yeah.
You could pay them 10 million if you wanted to.
But when you scratch beneath the surface of Bristol, there's not much there. They're not good at constructing squads. They're not good at the way they play. There's just not really much there. They're not impressive. They're good at spending money, though. They are great at spending money.
They finished top of the Premiership.
Yeah, when they spend all of that money. Now, as things have levelled out, as there's an even playing field, you can see that they are struggling. And then you look at other teams who are doing well. Like Northampton obviously focus on certain things. Leicester Tigers put so much effort into how they construct the squad. I mean, every single Premiership team is making calculations on what they have to leave out to, you know, as Chris Boyd would say, make the boats go faster, which I love that phrase, because it's exactly what they're trying to do. So I do think the Premiership produces more interesting rugby because the coaching is of a higher standard, because it has to be, because you can't just go and buy all the players. If you could just buy all of the best players in the world, would you really coach them that hard?
Well, they didn't. I wanted Bernard Laporte to do it
two long. He just left.
Exactly.
He left Johnny
Wilkinson
and back his boat to it.
Boys, just go and win. Yeah, just go win. And they will win because of the best players on earth. I sadly suspect that when we get to the cutting edge of the Champions Cup, it will revert to type and it will just be the biggest, most talented teams that make it. But certainly in the group scene, I'm talking around it. What I should really be saying is, well done, Premiership. You've had a great 2 weeks. That's what I should be saying.
And it's hard to know who I kind of love more, Henry Slade or Rob Baxter.
Oh my God.
It's so hard to call.
Can we start with them? Can we just start with them?
Yeah, just before, I'll just ask one question. Because it is, I think it's exactly right to say, well done to the Premiership and the teams and DORs and all the coaches involved, because they've got some very good results the last couple of weeks. But if you were going to put a bet on today, your own money, £10, and the bet is, which league do you think the winner of the Champions Cup is going to come from? Where would you put your money?
I'd put my money on the top 14.
URC.
I would probably also say top 14.
It's a tough call, though. Yeah, Toulouse.
All right, well, how about if you had to...
If you
had £10 right now and you could lay a bet on... I'm just thinking who's two from two and English and looking really good.
Extra two from two.
Yeah, but I know they've done it against the odds.
Bath are two from two.
Northampton two from two.
If you could...
Tigers are two from two.
Okay, all right, how about this? £10 and you can... The bet is an English team winning it or La Rochelle winning it.
Two from two versus 2-0.
Yeah, so La Rochelle with no wins and you can put bet on them winning it or... any English team winning the Champions Cup. I still reckon the bookies would probably have that quite relatively even.
And your better bet would be to say La Rochelle, if that is even money.
Yeah, the reason I would say La Rochelle is because I think there's more chance of an English team obviously getting to the knockouts, but once they're in the knockouts, they're going. So put your money on La Rochelle, because if they make the knockouts, they could win it.
And they will make the knockouts. I have no doubt. They'll probably have to travel away to...
They will.
Like Lyon or Leinster or someone like that.
But again, isn't that... That's what I will say about the Champions Cup. The round of 16 is going to be brilliant. And as good as these last 2 weeks are, it is preposterous that we're talking about a team... very, very good chance of making the knockouts, having lost their opening two games. That was that's unthinkable.
Well, and I think that is the. I was thinking about this weekend, because again we've seen teams rotate their squads. Some like definitively put out a second string team, like Stade Francais did it last week. Leicester Tigers won with it this week. Sale, it was definitely. A second string team went to Leinster, did very well, admirably, but his second string. Now, this is the last 16 tax. So they've got fewer group stage games. You only play four games instead of six in the group stages, but the balance of games has been increased or pushed back up by having the round of 16. Now, the round of 16 is in itself a good thing, but it is driving these negative behaviours because 16 out of 24 teams are going to qualify. You only really need to win one game and pick up a couple of bonus points and you'll be getting through.
Yeah.
So that is why you can totally throw two games and still qualify and still win the damn thing.
I think it's to make sure, isn't it, you've got a minimum amount of home games. So they give them two home games.
Yeah.
Just so you've definitely got something. Because otherwise, there's an argument for just straight knockout, which would be great.
Yeah.
Knockout from the start.
But then, it's the fewer... The clubs do need the games. Like, unquestionably, the clubs need the games.
Yeah.
It'd be worth £250,000, half a million pounds to most of these clubs to host a home game.
There's also the interesting prospect of clubs panicking, of losing the... Like La Rochelle, I mean, are they panicking? They probably are.
Well, they are. They tried to win both. They sent full teams to both of those matches that they've won, home and away.
So, there's some interesting... There's some interesting dynamics now, because... Some teams will have qualified early, so you can guarantee that all those Premiership teams that have won two from two will be qualifying now. And then other
they'll
teams
get through.
Will start to really panic because, Christ, we need to win something.
Well, also, the Premiership teams have fewer league matches, so they can still go full bore in rounds three and four.
But with weaker squads. So it's all finely balanced. But this has always been my point about the European Cup. The beauty of it is you get to see how different organisations manage their club teams. And which approach is best? Is it the Irish approach of making many finals but never winning? Or is it the French just spending as much money as you can in that ferocious league, or the constrictions of the salary cap in the English league? You know, one of those things. You know, and sometimes it is, unbelievably, the English teams with Exeter and Saracens, and it's very rarely...
Let's talk about Exeter. Oh, my
God. Let's
go on to that. Oh, wow.
I'm just amazed by Exeter. Can I launch off with a theory on Exeter?
Go on.
So my theory is this, which is when you've got a successful team, or a previously successful team like that classic Exeter team was, and you know all the names, they won the Premiership, they won the European Cup, and they were competitive like the year after that, and it slowly then started to disassemble itself in it. So Johnny Hill left, and we mentioned all of the players that left. Now, I think we've all been in teams which were very, very strong at this amateur level, very, very strong. And the next year, they're not quite as strong. I mean, even though they're objectively
top H this year.
Yeah. Even though they're objectively good teams, right? You don't feel as confident. And you know, your players don't show up as much. And I think Rob Baxter has identified that. And he's like, well, if we've got these players who are paid very well, but they're not going to show up as much because they were part of a previous dynasty of players, a previous iteration of this club, let's blow it all up and start again. And I think that's kind of what's happened. And the only one that they've kept is Henry Slade. Now, Henry Slade, just a quick word.
Ollie Woodburn as well.
Yeah, actually. I mean, there are a handful.
They're a sprinkling of them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Devoto, if he ever comes back.
I'm just looking at the team from 2020, the team that beat Racing 92 in the final in 2023 years.
Well, let's see if we can name the team.
Yeah, great game.
So, who would have started at Loosehead? Ben Moon have got a start?
Ben Moon or Hepburn?
Hepburn.
It was Ben Moon on the bench. Ben Moon. Hepburn started.
Okay, then it would have been Cowan Dickey and Yendall.
Yep.
Maybe in the other order.
Correct. It was Cowan Dickey started and Yendall on the bench.
And it would be Harry Williams and...
Who was the other one? Harry Williams.
You know the other prop.
Who was the other one? It wasn't...
He had to leave because he had to take a fair market rate.
Tommy Francis.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then you got Johnny Gray and Johnny Hill.
Johnny Gray and Johnny Hill. Johnny Gray, first one who's still there.
He's still there, but leaving.
Johnny Gray's still there.
Going to
injured. Yeah, he's
injured.
He's not played.
Apparently going to Bordeaux.
Oh right, okay. Which makes sense because why would you not?
And he'll be on Phil's
beloved Bordeaux.
He'll be on good money, and he's not played for...
Oh, no, yours. You're beloved Toulouse.
No, I am beloved Bordeaux.
You are beloved Bordeaux.
Beloved Bordeaux.
So back row is Simmons.
It's Simmons Armand. At eight. Yeah.
Armand wouldn't have started, would he?
Yeah, Armand start, I think.
Armand wasn't in the squad.
What, Ewers?
Big Dave Ewers.
My beloved Big Dave Ewers.
Yeah. At seven
for Exeter... In the Champions Cup final. Another big guy. No, I'm going another big guy. It was... Oh, Vermeulen.
So Vermeulen's still there.
He's still there.
Yeah.
Then you've got... it would have been Nick White.
And Nick White, I think he must have been injured.
Stu Townsend.
Not Townsend.
No, one of the...
Maunder.
Maunder A or Maunder B.
Yeah, Jack Maunder. Okay. Started. And on the bench?
Townsend then.
No.
Maunder... another Maunder?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. What's the other one?
So he played for a short period of time. I don't think he played
The Scottish fella.
Yes.
Because he came on and did an absolute worldy
thing. I know the one you
mean. What's his name? Double-barreled name.
Yes. You know him.
Oh, what's his name?
I interviewed him. He's at Lyon. And no, he's not at Lyon.
Oh, God.
I think he's in Italy now.
Tell us.
He's at your beloved Benetton, if his Wikipedia is correct.
I can't remember his name. Oh.
Come back to me.
Sam Hidalgo.
Klein. Yes.
Then 10 would be...
Simmons.
Yep.
12 would be the diminutive Ian Whitten.
Henry Slade.
13. Wingers, Woodburn and Noel.
Yeah.
Flatty. Woodburn wasn't in the squad.
And then it...
And not Hogg.
Was 15. It Hogg was not 15, was he?
15, he was Hogg.
I was Hogg for that one.
He started.
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
And the only people you've missed the bench... lock and back row.
So not Skinner.
Which could be either way around. Yeah, so Skinner was one of them.
Yeah.
And the other one, who is also a lock / back row, who I think you've mentioned him as well, actually, in Yanis Kirsten.
Oh, no, I didn't mention him, but yeah.
And then the two backs besides the scrum half who were on the bench.
Steno wasn't still playing then, was he?
Steno was still playing.
Really good.
Yeah.
Steno and Dollars.
Not dollars.
No, not dollars. Just
so of all those, maybe three of them left.
Devoto.
So I do think there's some sense of saying, look, you belong to a previous dynasty. I don't. It must be very hard to mentally.
Dynasty.
Yeah. Dynasty. It must be very hard as a player to build yourself back up, knowing that it's going to be a rebuilding team. So just stop with new players. I think that
it's really interesting because it is kind of the opposite of what Saracens have done.
Yeah,
they are like good for good and bad, but they are trying their best to keep that team together, the kind of skeleton of that team together, even when some of the players are perhaps past it. Some of the players are no longer the value that they were, and arguably they were never good value because they were paying over the odds for them in the first place.
They may have played a blinder with a couple of them because there's talk about the hybrid contracts and
nonsense.
And well, no, but this is one. Yeah. This the hybrid contracts. Contracts. Whilst you may agree, disagree, at least it would actually repay Saracens finally for all of their work producing England.
Well, yes, there is that. There is that.
And it does. It incentivizes the clubs to have England players, whereas now it's you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have these guys because they're the big names and they're the talent, but they're only going to be available to you half the season, so you're paying the biggest money to players that don't play for you.
So Mark Evans of Fiji Drew of fame and Holdings made a really good point that the England money, rather than being distributed for the players produced, should be just distributed evenly throughout all the clubs. So there is no incentive to keep your England players. Now, I know you don't like that, but actually it'd make for a more interesting league if everyone had an England player.
Yeah, it does make sense. And that is probably what the outcome would be, is everyone would end up with an England player.
Yeah.
Because they've got the money to go out and buy one. And the other thing, which it sounds a little bit like, is Rob Baxter's suggestion that every EPS squad member should get equal money, not just people that make a match day 23.
Yeah, although the match day 23 was decided by the players.
Yes, but
back in the day, and now they're thinking
that's because the group was 35 and you only need 23. We're the 23. No, I'm fine. I'll take the 25 bags. Thank you.
Let's vote. I'll be in the team.
Yeah, this motion needs 22 votes for it to go through.
So it's remarkable what Rob Bax has done with this, basically a brand new team.
Yeah.
You're watching them really play, and you can see there's a pattern, there's a structure, and because there is a strict pattern, a strict structure, they can perform very well within that strict structure because they're comfortable doing it.
I mean, their strict structure got them into trouble. The four Munster tries all came down the right hand side, all from, and it was pointed out by Sam Warburton and Tom May and Combs, wasn't it? It was pointed out repeatedly about their rush defence and incredibly narrow defence that Munster, through either kick passes or wide passes, just exploited.
Yeah. And by the way, on Munster, I know they'll be very disappointed with the result, and there's a little bit of self-implosion there, but you have to say they play some great rugby now, like rugby that we haven't seen from Munster in a long time.
They do play nice. They do play nice rugby, in fairness. And from Leicester's point of view, if you're going to get beaten
out wide.
That's what you got to do. And actually, it worked, didn't it? Because they did score points, but just not enough.
Yeah, and they missed. They only got two conversions, missed two because they were having tough kicks.
Now, Henry Slade, I just want to go back to him. He was already an Exeter legend, but I think there's always some doubt about how good he was because he's surrounded by other good players. But as like the sole great player that they have left from all those years in the past, he actually looks like it. He actually looks like their one remaining great player. Now, everyone else is playing great, but he is turning himself into an absolute nailed-down Exeter Chiefs legend, though.
Oh, yeah, as if he wasn't already.
I mean, there were others that could sort of,
he's stuck around and he's making more stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like Noel Cowan-Dickie.
Steenson, for me, is probably the greatest.
Yeah, because he was there in the championship. Ben Moon would be up there.
Yeah, Ben Moon. Yeah, Steenson, all those boys. But he's been with all of them. And now if he can be successful in this version of the team as well, he then becomes, in my mind, probably their greatest player.
Let me jump us sideways a little bit and let's just try and solve Steve Borthwick's lovely England conundrum, because there's a lot of players playing very well in that 13 jersey. Ollie Lawrence is looking great. Henry Slade's looking great. Tommy Freeman's looking really good. And there are others. There's another one that I had in my mind. Oh, the lad, Ollie Hartley.
Did he have 12 on his back, though? That'd be useful.
You're right.
Nick Tompkins got pushed to 13.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So, Exeter were absolutely awesome. Sandy Park, I don't know what the other sand looked like, but the cameras were showing most of it.
13,000 there, so awesome. Full. It's great.
Do you
to
know,
see,
I love Exeter so much because partway through the second half, they started up with the tomahawk chop again. It's like, yeah, screw everyone else. It's all about cheats.
Just the fans, they're not playing it over the PA anymore, are they? Or are they?
It doesn't matter. Because you can hear it.
The DJ was playing all sorts of tunes over the over the PA.
I just loved it. It's like, if Exeter can just get, there are a handful of clubs in the country that can do this. Probably Gloucester, Bath, Exeter, Northampton, Leicester. So actually, I've named five there. But once they get on a winning run, they fill their stadium. And I think that if this Exeter Chiefs team just can continue to win and give people around there a bit of belief, they will fill that stadium and it will be a success story.
Just on that, like I don't really mind one way or the other. I don't have a strong opinion on it at all. Are people actually upset by the tomahawk chop?
Do you know what? The more they're upset, the more they should do it because it's their identity now. Like, it is a big middle finger to everyone else who's disparaged that club. People like Hugo Monya and...
He wouldn't care about a song.
Oh, are you joking?
You'd have to be so thin-skinned to care about a song.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to my legal letter from him.
I'm offended by a song.
Yeah, interestingly, no one's been charged with that yet, so we'll wait to see if the most blatant case of racism anyone's ever seen ever in the history of the world, which is on multiple cameras with multiple witnesses, ever does get charged. But we'll see, won't we? And I'm sure I'll get my so-called legal letter. Looking forward to that. And Sonia McLaughlin as well. So people like that is a massive middle finger to, because it's Exeter Chiefs, and it's an amazing club.
It really is an amazing club.
I would agree, it's an amazing club, 100%. I love it. And there were some special moments. Great second half as well. When you actually look at the three tries for Exeter.
Of these new players, so we spoke about all players. Of the new players, who are you liking?
Daffith Jenkins.
Yes.
Oh my goodness me, what a player.
Yeah,
he's good. And he's 20.
Yeah, he's huge. He's absolutely huge. So the one that I really liked at the moment is, I want to say, is it Ben Hammersley?
Winger.
Correct, yeah.
Now, he's a little bit shaky on defence today.
Yeah.
He was a bit shaky, but every time I've seen him play, like Newcastle, he was absolutely superb. He can really run. He's going to be a very, very dangerous player. Hawkins seems like an absolute top.
Best game I've seen Dan Frost play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was great.
Frost, another important pickup from
Wasps. Greg Fisselau was great.
Yeah.
Fisselau had a big game.
So, Tuima and Pearson are both just big bodies. They're both young men, but just they're the size of young men that Exeter need.
Yeah.
So just having that size is really important, and they're talented, and they will continue to develop.
What amazes me about this team is it's the desire to play. So you're watching them, and they just don't die. Like, how many teams would have crumbled in the face of it? You know, Munster, just the reputation alone is fearsome.
And when Munster scored early, 5-10 minutes into the second half to make it 24-10. That most teams would have crumbled then.
Yeah, I'd love to know in Exeter, like, how much say do the other coaches have in what is actually been delivered there, or do they just have to deliver what Rob Baxter says?
I suspect Baxter does. He does the big picture stuff, but then leaves the detail up to
I would imagine it's very collaborative, I would say. What I will say, though, is Rob Baxter did try and take a big step back.
Yeah.
And then it did not go well, and he came back in and grabbed the reins again. So I think he needs to have his hands on the reins, but it will be a...
I think he's giving messages like, you deliver this however you want, but you must have this outcome.
Yeah, it is this.
You can imagine him simplifying things.
Yeah.
Can't you?
That is the beauty of it. They play really simple rugby, which you can understand. So when they always say at the full-time team talk, or when you go to the coaches, they spoke about a few things at half-time. And the few things that they speak about, they always tell you, and they always seem to make sense.
Yeah. So I will just... We touched on it before, but Munster, for the first 50 minutes, would deserve to be 14 points up.
Mm-hmm.
And credit to Graham Rowntree and his coaching set up for identifying and exploiting that weakness in Exeter's defence.
Yeah, because they were flying up.
Flying up and short on the... Particularly on that Exeter's left-hand side, Munster's right-hand side, which is where the four tries came from.
I like Jack Crowley and...
Yeah.
I like Kieran Frawley as well. I think Ireland have got a couple of good players there.
Yeah, and that... Like, you look at that Munster team sheet, that is not filled with stars.
No.
There's... I mean, Ty Byrne is...
Tyburn is
by far the biggest name.
And he's also, I know, just giving praise to everybody in the Exeter team, he's also by far the best player on the field.
Oh, he's a hell of a player.
He is absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. In every facet of the game, he is outstanding. But that Munster team,
no, you're right.
They are not big names across the board. And they played very well. They will rightly be very disappointed not to come out of there with more.
Agreed. In terms of England watch, Bath, Alfie Barbary had a very, very good game.
He's going quite nicely at the moment, Barbary.
Yeah. And just more broadly on this, so we've had three Premiership teams go bust. I genuinely think, I'm not in for a British and Irish league.
No. Nope.
But if there was two Welsh regions, East and West, don't care where they are really, and put them in the Premiership, I think that's cooking. Because that packed Cardiff Arms Park and that atmosphere and that edge for an Anglo-Welsh matchup, there's something about that.
Do you know, I love the idea, right? I do love the idea. And I think Cardiff as a city and a central population is a good rugby experience, so on and so forth, etc., etc. However, the depth of politics which already exists in English rugby, do you really want to pollute that with... I mean, it's like leaving one psychotic wife and then immediately marrying another.
Out of the frame pan.
Really want to overlay...
Well, actually, it's like juggling a mistress on the side, a psychotic mistress on the side of a psychotic wife.
I'm really fed up at home, let me get a psychotic mistress, right?
You're going through a messy divorce and you've got your new wife already and you're putting in a psychotic mistress.
Yeah, that is what it would be like, Tim. I mean, it can't get much more... There's not many more dysfunctional organisations than English rugby as a whole, except for Welsh rugby.
WRU, and then the...
is that what you want?
Well, it would be, yes, and look, I'm not totally convinced by the administration of Premiership Rugby, but it would be Premiership Rugby running it, and it would be...
Good Lord.
It would be the Welsh... Yeah, it would be the Welsh regions who would have to move to the beat of their drum.
Oh, no.
I mean, if you could somehow eliminate all of the politics, it could work. A 12-team league with... East and West,
or
even like East Swansea and Cardiff.
Even if you took Cardiff and Edinburgh and said Wales will have one from you, do what you want with the rest of your rugby, and Scotland will have one from you, Edinburgh.
Yeah,
and do what you want with the rest of your rugby. I mean, almost just like poach two regions, one from Scotland, one from Wales.
You could always do it like a tender, like, but make them bid, and as part of the tender, you've got to show that you are financially competent, and you're effectively managed,
and be willing to exile yourself from your home union.
Good Lord, no. Just no. Leave it as it is.
Anyway, the point was, I loved the Anglo-Welsh nature of this. It felt good.
Yeah, that is great. Just to finish that point off, I was going to make... Everyone talks about the concussion issue, and I'll be talking about that a bit more later. But one of the good things about the 10-team league is one of the only ways to solve the concussion and welfare issue is less rugby. And I think increasing the league size again, we're down to 10, leave it at 10. You've done it by accident, but you are here now. Don't increase it to 12 again.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's just whether the clubs are sustainable.
I suppose 10. The other element is, if you start getting franchises out of your regular league structure, you can't have promotion relegation. And I do think we should have.
And I don't. I think you've got 10 teams now. Leave it as it is. Let it run. I mean, if you've got 10 unsustainable teams, why do you want 12 unsustainable teams?
More revenue.
If
you get another £500,000 on your...
But where's the limiting factor here?
Make it 500 teams.
Exactly right. Play multiple times a day.
Yeah, there are 500 clubs in England.
Yeah, why not?
Bath looked very good, though. Ollie Lawrence, again, looks... very good. Alfie Barbary was great. So England watch, it's lots of positives.
I do wonder, kind of watching the highlights of this game, what was the game on at this time?
It was Leinster Sale.
Was it Leinster Sale? Or was it an earlier game? Anyway, yeah, it probably was Leinster Sale. So I was watching that. But I was watching it thinking, talking to Singer's going really well.
Jay.
Sorry.
That's fine. I'm just going. I'm just making you aware.
Your breathing is quite loud.
Sorry.
It's fine. I think it might be where the mic is in proximity to your nose.
You're watching some Instagram videos of people lifting.
Hello.
Thokkinesinger and Wilmuir. Thokkinesinger's going well. I'd wonder if kind of neutral and Thokkinesinger wasn't already an England winger, whether you put the two on the pitch and said to someone who knows nothing about rugby, which one of those you think is the more talented player, whether Wilmuir would 8 times out of 10 get that shout.
I've never seen a match where Wilmuir has been playing on the wing where he's not been the best winger on the field. Very rarely.
Yeah. And now Josh Adams was playing in this game and he finished 2 tries beautifully and he's a hell of a winger. But Wilmuir is just—he's such a good player. And he's a big, strong boy. He's not quite as big as Thokkinesinger, but he's a big, strong boy as well.
So here's another question, right? Because Mac Hansen—he's not small, but he's not the quickest. He's not the biggest. He's not the strongest. He's just an exceptional rugby player
and a great rugby brain and
great rugby brain and all of that.
Other people can't, or the wingers certainly can't do.
So I think we know the answer to the question. If Mac Hansen was playing in the Premiership, how many England caps would he have got?
Zero.
Probably a big fat zero.
He wouldn't be close.
No, he wouldn't be close.
He played in Australia. How many Australia caps did he get?
Yeah.
Zero.
But the other question would be, if Joe Thokkinesinger was at an Irish province, how many Ireland caps would he have got? Because weirdly, I kind of think that they'd still go with Mac Hansen.
They would do. It would be a shootout for the other wing berth. I think because James Lowe is, I think he is a better player, all-round player than Thokkinesinger.
Yeah, no.
But he's not. The job that Thokkinesinger does is more like James Lowe than it is
Mac Hansen. The Irish wingers, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but it strikes me that they have their wingers to do many other things other than traditional wing play.
Yeah, James Lowe's kicking. Yeah, massive.
So they move him around like a siege gun.
Yeah,
and then there's Mac Hansen, who's almost like a second playmaker.
Yeah,
the way that they play with the current wingers, 100%.
So that's
one of the reasons why probably Balakoon hasn't had the look in that he certainly his form 2 years ago.
Balakoon would have deserved a great shout of being an England winger.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other two wouldn't.
Yes, yeah, you're exactly right.
Stockers would have been an England winger.
Yeah, he would have, because they value size, don't they? They value size and people that look like international rugby players.
And Stockers, his form, it's going back 4 or 5 years
He was
now
the best winger in the world.
He was. He had a couple of seasons where he was the best winger in the world. Cubed. I mean, he is a big, strong boy as well. He's like 105
How's he playing
kg
at the moment?
Cubed did all right the other night against Rassie.
Well, Ulster had an amazing night. Yeah. Really, really good Ulster performance.
He absolutely smashed Arundel in the first few minutes.
Did he?
He just ended him.
Yeah. Arundel didn't do
nothing
at all.
This is again like Henry Arundel has got incredible raw materials, but when he's not given the ball, like someone goes and basically places it in his hands, he doesn't. He's either completely on, or he's just
he
not,
has
he's
some
not
amazing
there
moments, doesn't he?
Yeah,
but
he didn't have any in this game.
Wing is a funny position, which is you can play it in so many different ways, and I think particularly younger wingers have got to appreciate what being a winger is all about. You know, you can make a hell of a successful career by not finishing and just chasing kicks. You know, you can be a finisher. You can be the Jack Knoll type, which does everything. I mean, think about Jack Knoll. Think about the two lads that we've just mentioned who are completely different to each other and then completely different to Jack Knoll. Then you've got your Cock and the Singers. You've got so many different types of winger. He just needs to decide what he is and execute it on a more regular basis. But at the moment, he's just a very fast guy who's good with the ball in hand.
Well, watching Bordeaux, I mean, I know they got the ball to the outside quite a lot, but you cannot imagine if they were having a quiet 10 minutes, you cannot imagine BLBRA and Penno just standing on their wing.
Penno does not like drift out of the game.
No.
Penno is always in the game. Well, whereas Arundel will drift out of the game.
Penno is like Jupiter or something like that, which is he has this gravitational force and the ball is attracted to him. And so it should be. He's like this fulcrum out wide and you have to get the ball to him because something will happen.
Big statement. Is Penno the best player on earth at the minute? Even more so than DuPont?
Oh, I mean, it is a big statement.
I think he might be.
Yeah, he's up there, isn't he? He's certainly up there.
He's just so involved in everything.
And he reads opposition defenders so well. That's why his steps look so effortless, because he's got that perfect timing. And it's the other things he does, like the kicking, and He just makes things happen. Yeah. Yeah. I'd say he's up there. I wouldn't say he's the most important because wing is a funny position, but he's certainly up there. He's certainly the best winger in the world.
So we've moved from my beloved Ulster, which we could talk more about, to my beloved Bordeaux.
Yeah, they played great rugby.
But on Ulster and Racing 92, so you had none of the wingers. Imhoff for the Le Garec try was excellent, but none of the wingers did that much. It was more of a, as you'd kind of expect at the Kingspan in mid-December, it was more of a game for the purists, more of a JB-type game.
Yes.
There were some interesting things done by Ulster. I don't know if you watched this, Jay.
I didn't. And so let's see a second of Ulster, because I know that you'll be watching it.
They scored...
They battered them, 31-15.
21-5 at half-time.
Yeah, yeah. And it was all Ulster. Like, it ended up being pretty comfortable. Racing got a couple of late tries, pushover tries to make it look more respectable, but it was a really good performance by Ulster. Ulster scored 3 tries from tap and goes in the 5 metre.
Mm-hmm.
3 tries?
3 tries from tap and goes, 2 of which were tap pass to Hendo, Ian Henderson, mm-hmm. and Henderson took 3 steps forward, turned around, and they set up a rolling maul and mauled Racing 92 over the line.
Is that Timoney's tries?
They did that twice. I think that was definitely one of Timoney's, maybe both of Timoney's. The other one, that was really, like, it was really old school. Like, I've not seen that for years, and they did it and scored 2 tries against Racing 92. So who looks at that Racing 92 pack and says, oh yeah, I know what we're going to do. We're going to deliberately set up a rolling maul 5 metres out from the line and just push them over twice.
Easy.
The other thing that they did, which was a neat little trick which ended up in the McCloskey try, was Cooney, tap and go 5 metres from Racing's line. He taps the ball, but he doesn't catch the ball. Nick Timoney was already running onto the ball.
Yeah.
So he taps it, and Nick Timoney takes it at pace, kind of catches the defence off guard, takes it in once and just pops left, and McCloskey spins over the line.
So many teams are going to be doing that next weekend.
Yes. So many, like level teams. 7 and under 16s, Broughton Park next weekend.
I think Broughton Park are doing no game next weekend, obviously, but in the new year, watch out. We'll be doing that.
Yeah, so I've always liked Racing, but the Stuart Lancaster era has not got off to a great start in Europe.
It's not a great start.
Are they good people, though, yet? Has he made them into good people?
I have no doubt they're good people. Yeah, I mean, Lancaster and Khaleesi, they're going to be great people.
Oh, my God. The sanctimony in that team at the moment.
Whether they are good enough.
They're top of the top 14. Big Stu's doing all right.
Are top. There is that, then.
Equal on points with Toulon and Cast, and only a point ahead of Stad and Pau, but they are nevertheless top.
Now, one thing that Racing will... Racing should be doing better when... I think Ulster lost 6 lineouts in the first half. Wocky was amazing.
He is superb in the lineout.
He put so much pressure on... it was first Robbie Herring, and then he went off for a HIA, and Moore came on, and then Herring went back on, and then Moore came back on. He was just putting so much pressure on Ulster, which is why they end up going for the tap and goes and using their full repertoire there. But very, very good win for Ulster.
Kitsoff looks very good as well. He looked like a good signing for them last night.
And Dave Ewers as well.
Big Dave.
Because he carries hard. He hits. Oh, God, who did he hit? I think it was Gilbert, the number 10. He absolutely smashed him with all 130 kg of Big Dave Ewers. So Ulster, they have got some size, maybe not quite enough for the latter stage of the tournament. Having guys like Timoney and Matty Ray, who are good, they're kind of like 6.5s, so they're not really quite big enough for full big boy rugby.
As much as JB, you might sort of say, oh, the Lancaster era hasn't bedded in yet, or hasn't done what you want. Equally, you could argue Leinster are missing him.
Well, did they not win?
They did, but they're not fizzing yet. They don't look like Leinster did last year.
But they beat...
They beat La Rochelle, to be fair.
Yeah, they beat La Rochelle away.
They beat La Rochelle away, and they beat Sale's second team.
And they struggled for a bit against Sale's second team.
They certainly did.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a bad team. I mean, I didn't see this, actually. I thought it was going to be an absolute beatdown.
Wasn't a bad team, but it wasn't. It's not a good team.
It's a second string team.
If they don't send
With the exception of Roebuck and Reed and Ernst van Rijn.
Even Roebuck and Reed, you'd argue that O'Flaherty would be in there. He'd be in one of those positions.
Yeah, he'd be in one of them. So one of the wingers, one of the back row, and that is, other than that, second choice in every position.
Talent in that team.
That's a compliment to say. Yeah.
It is definitely a second string team.
If the name George Ford isn't on the team sheet, it's a second string sale team.
But in
actually that can't be right because the best fly half
in the press in Ireland, I can't remember which one. Maybe it was the Irish Independent or whatever. Anyway, it said Leinster will eat toothless sharks on the day of the match.
Ooh.
And Alex Anderson's response was like, right, well...
Yeah, we'll talk.
We'll show you.
Yeah. And all of those players... So it is a second string, definitely. But they're all fighting for that shirt. So it's a great opportunity. And all of the boys put their hands up. Every single player wearing a sales shirt put their hands up and put in a good performance. There were some exceptional performances amongst them. Some of the hits from Van Rijn and Doug Dale were awesome.
Doug Dale can bang. And the other one, actually, I will say I've seen on the highlights too, is encouraging me. And we all knew he was good, but he has definitely lost. He's definitely the second choice scrum half.
Raffy Quirk. Yeah.
Now, if he can start firing, Sale have got all... I mean, I still think he's the second choice. And the reason I think that is because he can change a game. So it's good to have him on the bench.
You're saying he's a game changer? A finisher?
Yes. They should call them that. Not concussion boys, like I suggested.
The other boy who was amazing in burst, he's got some pace, was Reed.
Yes.
His break for the final try was amazing.
Reed has always been absolutely rapid. But my criticism of him is he hasn't really caught up with the game. He wasn't reading the game well. He wasn't getting into those opportunities to allow him to use his pace. That seems to have solved itself now.
Yeah, he is getting there. So, Sale, a lot to be proud of from that Sale team. Leinster struggled in the first half. Genuinely struggled to break Sale down. Struggled with some of the running and attacking lines from Sale. But it was never in doubt. They were always going to win this game, and they were always going to get a bonus point win. Mm. And they did it at a canter in that second half.
Yeah, and they did take their foot off the gas, and Sale got in with two late tries to make the scoreline look
closer. Looks more respectable, but there were 25 points up with 2 minutes to go. Mm. So it was already game over at that point, 20 minutes before that.
And I suppose the other one of the favourites, we'll go from Leinster to Toulouse. Who look? Oh my goodness me, they look good.
That was a worrying result for a lot of other teams because Quins are a good team.
Quins are also a flaky team, aren't they? I know that's a bit of a cliche, but it's absolutely true. They will come at you flying, but they are susceptible to conceding points.
Yes, they are susceptible, but not they haven't been, and not you, and that doesn't normally happen at home.
And after a really good win in very difficult circumstances away in Paris last week.
But maybe Paris aren't the team that we think they are.
Maybe they're not. Maybe the Lancaster effect.
It is a matchup thing, isn't it? Because I'm just looking at Quinn's results, and they've been very. It's been all of their matches have been really close all season, except for Newcastle. We can sort of put that one to one side. But except for now, and they absolutely spanked Sale a couple of weeks back, if you remember.
Yeah, I do.
But they got absolutely humped by Toulouse today, and they got humped by Saracens last month. So it's kind of every now and again, against particularly good teams, they will not just lose narrowly, they'll get pumped.
Hammered.
Yeah, I think it's probably something to do with the way that they play as well. Like if they can't get on the front foot and they can't start exploiting the holes and attacking in the way that they do, I think that compounds into their defence. I think it gets to them mentally. And you know, when you're as big as Toulouse and as sturdy as Toulouse, you will stop them scoring, and then you start getting over the game line, and it all compounds.
I think what I've been thinking for a while when I watch France, what they really need is a large man in their pack.
Yeah,
they're really struggling for that.
Who are you thinking of?
Emmanuel Mayafu. Oof. Oh my goodness, he looked good.
Yeah, but big bodies, mate. You just can't replace sheer size.
Absolute shoo-in to be in their Six Nations squad.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not. The reason I don't want to talk about that game so much is because I didn't really watch it that closely. The game I did watch very closely though was Northampton Toulon. I loved it.
On
loved
Friday night.
Can we persuade Courtney Laws to not to come back into the international fold, because he's playing that well?
No, leave him be. Leave him be. you need these players playing their best rugby week in, week out.
I don't need him playing for really well for Northampton.
I prefer watching him play for Northampton.
He's the best blindside flanker in the world. Well, no, in the Northern Hemisphere. Yeah, like Peter Steph de Toit only would best him.
I don't know.
In a head-to-head. On that basis, he should be playing on the very highest stage.
Look at the Toulouse back.
The man opposite him, Olivon. Wearing number seven.
Wearing seven.
But plays... He's a blindside flanker.
Yeah. I mean, he was up there with Olivon.
He was well, man of the match.
Yeah, of course.
Again.
What are you
after
doing?
After last week, his try-saving tackle, which I watched several times, actually, just to see where he came from.
Yeah.
And when the kick was collected by the Toulon player, he was the furthest forward of all the Northampton players. So he covered more ground than anyone else to get back for that. He's playing so well. He really should be, because of the exceptional circumstances with the number of injuries and number of injuries to captains, those who have captained the team.
He should be starting for England and be their captain. There's
no question. He should be in the Six Nations. Yeah. He definitely.
Corpse, what are you doing, man?
No, leave him be.
You're a Welshman. You can't comment on this.
I want to see him.
Do you not want to see him £100,000 richer?
I'd love to see him £100,000.
There you go,
yeah,
then.
I would actually. I would like to see him £100,000 richer. There's no two ways about that. But on the other hand, I want to see. I love watching club rugby, so I want the highest quality of club rugby. And last 2 years, we've hardly seen him at all for Northampton.
I tell you what, if you like
five club appearances or something,
if you like club rugby that much, you should pay Courtney Laws £100,000 out of your own pocket, out of Beardmore pocket, so he doesn't play for England.
No, that's not my game. That is a game for men like Simon Orange and Steve Lansdowne.
Oh, by the way, gents, I've had some contact from with Northampton, batting back and forth, knowing that it's my beloved Bayonne, and knowing how massive a fan we are of just Courtney Laws in general and the great work that's being done at Northampton. It's just an invite extended from Saints.
I'd love to go.
Oh, really?
I've never been to
Friday the 12th of Jan.
Yes, I'll definitely go.
Yeah, I'm keen for that as well.
So let's talk about Saints. Where do we even start? No, let's talk about Toulon. Toulon do seem to be like just a collection of players thrown together, don't they? there's two guys in there who are ex-Saints.
That is how they were when they were at their very best.
That is true, yeah. Yeah, but except it's not like Peter... If this was the modern-day version of the old Toulon, it'd be Peter Steph de Toit, it would be... In fact, it'd just be the whole South African pack, wouldn't it?
with
Owen Farrell at 10.
Owen Farrell at 10.
Sam Whitelock would be in there.
It'd be Owen Farrell and Beauden Barrett playing 10-12 for ridiculous reasons that we don't understand. Ben White is not the answer to winning the European Cup, but it was good to see him playing well. I've always liked Ben White. I liked him when he's at Leicester. I liked him when he's at Irish. So that was pretty cool. Pretty cool to see. Jack Singleton, Kieran Brooks, Dave Ribbons, and then halfway through, I was like, "Who needs Dave Ribbons anyway? They're absolutely battering Toulon." But I think the reality of this game was they were lucky to win it, but they put themselves in a situation to win it, and that's probably the more important. Oh, Dan Bigger, there's another one.
Yes, Dan Bigger is actually kind of like
the sort of player that he should be having.
Yeah, exactly.
Melvin Jaminet had one of the biggest horrors for a try I've ever seen, but then absolutely turned it on. So I heard that he just didn't fit in Toulouse for whatever reason it was. He just didn't make much of a difference. So he was signed for Toulouse.
He's not Tom Aramos, basically, who was incredible, by the way.
No, so what happened was when Toulouse got rid of, I want to say, Cheslin Colby, they sold him for a lot of money. They had a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jaminet was like, we're going to go and get a big name to fill the shoes of Colby, who didn't work and also went to Toulon after Colby screwed over, not just Toulouse, but then Toulon. So it looks like Jaminet has followed in the shoes of wherever Colby has previously been. Now, he started off poor, but he is one hell of a player. When he started to really play, he looked ace.
He is a good player.
Yeah. as for Saints, their game plan, the way that they play, it's just the ferocity of their attack. I absolutely love it. And
got an email on this.
I'm trying to think of the try. Yes, it was the offload from Tommy Freeman. I don't know how that is physically possible.
Yeah, yeah. The Freeman to Furbank for Furbank. That was Furbank's second try.
We've got an email here. contact@headchasers@gmail.com from Paul Lee. And I'm going to try and just scoot through this, Paul. He said, Eddie Jones often discussed how the defence is the easy part of the game to implement, and once that was in place, they could start working on the attack patterns. And obviously that didn't work particularly well for England under Eddie Jones. He says, Saints seem to have gone the other way. Chris Boyd took a team full of young talent and focused on the loose skills, very much to the detriment of the tight five in the front-up defence. Mm-hmm. They created a team which got used to watching... We got used to watching score lots of tries, play attractive and exciting rugby, but never able to win through the winter months. The supporters stuck with the players and coaches and always appreciated the brand they were playing, which often ended in disappointment at the sharp end. This season, they've addressed the defence by bringing in Lee Radford, and it has clicked fast. We were used to getting the odd result in matches that suited us, such as Quinns or Exeter, but the last three games, Sarries away, Glasgow away, Toulon at home, have shown we can stand up with the best in all circumstances. The tight five have held their own at scrum time. The line-out has been a solid platform to launch from, and first-up tackles have mostly been positive ones, giving Jacklers a chance to win turnover ball. Are Saints now looking like a team that can go into a playoff semi and not be considered the easy draw? Keep it up, lads. Let the boys play.
Yeah, I think when you look at Saints, they're just incredibly dangerous. Well-drilled, incredibly dangerous.
And I think that is fair, that they're... They can match it. They can go in. I know that currently they are outside the top four, but if they do make it into the top four, they will be. They're no easy ride at all because they can mix it with anyone. And they're I'm just looking at the Premiership table at the moment. Their points against is basically the same as the top five teams.
Yeah,
slightly better than Saracens, slightly better than Harlequins. Marginally worse than Bath and Sale.
I was going to say, it's actually fewer points scored.
Yeah, weirdly. Mm. They're a really, really good team.
If they can get to March being semi-successful.
Yeah, in the top five, top six by March.
By the time they hit the dry months, they are going to be dynamite.
Yeah.
I think they're looking great. They do enough in defence. They do enough up front. And, yeah, the attacking patterns are great. I'm still worried about Tom Pearson, though. I mean, again, I felt he had another completely ineffective game. So maybe it's just confirmation bias because I'm starting to watch for it now.
That is not like you.
Yeah, but I've still not seen anything I like from him in a Saints shirt.
Maybe it's because he's doing more unseen work. But, yeah, I tend to agree he was quiet. And that's by his standards, where Irish last year, he was so dangerous. Last year, the year before... he was so dangerous, just throwing men off him. He was like, unstoppable as a ball carrier.
You know the way sometimes teams have systems, whether it's the 3-3-2 or 1-1 on each end, and you end up with a particular player that stays out in the tram lines, out wide. Faletau for Wales did this for years, and as a result, he was always getting the ball in certain situations which would make him do memorable things. Dane Coles, perfect example. There might be a little bit of that where London Irish had him within a system where that position just had big influences on them. Now he's around.
Yeah, so I think that is definitely possible. But the other man who wears that shirt would be Lewis Ludlam, who, if he finds himself in the position that Lewis Ludlam finds him in, you'd think he would be as noticeable as Ludlam is in a Saints shirt.
I do agree with the thrust of what you're saying, Tim, because we know this is a great player. We know it because he's one of the best players in the Premiership last year. So I'm not doubting his quality. I'm just doubting the employment of him for Northampton.
And maybe it's just a timing thing that he's taken a little while to get up to speed in a new club. He's not quite hit the ground running the same way that Lawrence or Barbary have. But he is a really talented player, so I have no doubt it will come.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last play of the game, effectively the last play of the game, was an absolute nightmare for Toulon. Did you see this?
So this is where they've got two men in the bin... And they're going.
Sorry, not that. No, the binning of the two players.
Okay.
What a turnaround! So in one phase of play, they suffered two yellow cards. And it takes some balls as a referee to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You say one yellow card will be plenty.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
And we'll let the other guy off. Like, no, you're having a yellow. You're having a yellow.
Just on that broader point, and this has come up in group chats with guys in our group chats that actually referee. But there is more. The footballification of rugby is continuing. It's not. It doesn't happen all of a sudden. It's always incremental and very slowly, almost imperceptible, the changes. But where it is now versus where it was a couple of years ago is, it's taken quite some leap forward, both in terms of all the chops in at the ref, the play acting. I saw it from Jack Crowley.
Why, what did he do?
There was a tackle, I can't remember who it was. It was a penalty against, was it Jack Crowley? No, it was in,
it wasn't one of the Saracens game, was
it? No, it was, was it Jack Crowley?
Was it Harvey Skinner?
Yes, Harvey Skinner put a tackle in towards the end of the game.
Harvey Skinner and banged him.
He banged him, and it was given a high tackle, and it was chest first, rode up towards the chin. But Jack Crowley was holding his face. And I've seen it quite a few times this weekend. It looks like simulated dives.
Do you know? I'm going to stick up for Jack Crowley here because I saw that hit, and I thought, A, Skinner's obviously been watching Owen Farrell's worst hits or greatest hits, depending on which side of the fence you're on. And he hit him so hard in the chest. I thought, oh, that's fine, because the initial contact was in the chest.
I'll hold your face.
But when it rose up, it was like an uppercut. I thought, bloody hell, that does look painful.
Yeah, so hold your face.
I don't know. I don't think I'd hold my face if I just got uppercutted.
The incentives are there. It's always probably going to happen, and it's all the talk of rugby values, which don't really exist.
They don't exist.
Dan Robson, there was a tweet from him last week on the 9th of December, and I don't actually know what game he was watching at the time, but his point was, if you grab your head and go down whinging, you have to go off for a HIA.
Yeah, surely. Rightly so.
Too much play acting going on nowadays. Yeah. And I think that is right. Like, the incentives are there to mean you will, or players will, unless it's stamped out, let's just say play act, because that's the word that Dan Robson has used. But if you go down a hole in your head, it is an immediate HIA. So, no questions asked.
Stuart Barnes wrote an article last week in the Times about the La Rochelle Leinster game, and it was actually quite interesting because he was saying that this was the game which was the worst of rugby because both teams made it so hard for the referee to referee by, you know, arguing by, you
Matt,
know.
Matt Carley was the ref.
Yeah.
You know, and he said to James Ryan, I'm not going to talk to you.
Yeah, the co-captains.
Partly
co-captains
because should be banned. Co-captains, what's that about?
Yeah, co-captains should be banned. Not, why don't you just make all 15 captain? You know, co-captain's gone, it's one captain. But I was thinking about this from a competitive advantage point of view. Like, if one team is making it hard to ref and you make it easy to ref, you will get the rub of the green. Mm. You just will. That's what good captains do.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It is a gamble, though.
Yeah. But it's a gamble. And
you're hoping the referee comes out on your side and doesn't, like, get fed, like, feel bad for getting nagged all the time, that kind of thing.
It's like the, quite often, I'm sure that some of the, I love the Ben Earl celebration thing, but I'm sure some of that type of celebrating, when, say, a mall gets collapsed and goes down and people start going, yeah, they're doing that to preempt the decision that, oh, that was a collapsed mall, scrumble.
So maybe they are, but I always think of doing that, particularly when you're away from home. So we used to talk about it all the time in Broughton Park. It's making your own atmosphere. So getting excited for your mates, and I'm sure Saracens are doing that.
Oh, no, definitely.
It's just like, we just celebrate absolutely everything, and it does get under your skin as the opposition, really. And there's nothing wrong with it. I love it.
Oh, no, there was I think I mentioned it, Phil's old, do you call it alma mater when you're...
Alma mater,
or your old university, your alumni. Sorry, that's the word I was thinking. That's an American phrase, isn't it? But anyway, you're the alumni from Lancaster University, and they brought one of their teams to play the Manchester Metropolitan University team that I did. And I tell you what, even just as coach, you know, just standing on the sideline, the travelling Lancaster uni lads going, woo! Woo! Everything.
It's very annoying, isn't it?
It got so annoying. It did the job.
It does do the job. And also, the arguing with the ref, I mean, sometimes it works. And all, you know, like, you watch Dan Bigger play. Everyone knows Dan Bigger is just outstanding. You know, where he talk, like, he was on BT, TNT Sport, talking to one of the presenters. And he's just, you know, he's a great rugby mind, a great ambassador for rugby. But you probably wouldn't want to copy his behaviour as a kid on the field when he's talking to the ref, because he's always, always talking. So he can be like that. But alternatively, Wales have also had someone like Alan Wynne-Jones, who has been captain, who captains just with his sheer gravitas.
Sam Warburton. Yeah, Warburton's a great example.
Jack Morgan now.
Yeah, there's so many ways to do this. Now, the question is, what's the most effective way? I don't think it's that effective. I think referees can get on your side. I don't think it makes a huge difference either way.
Well, I think because of the incentive structure, I think if it was something that was very much disadvantageous, it would have stopped.
Mm. Maybe. I also think the referees that we use in the Champions Cup, I mean, I was watching the Georgian fella.
Amashikari.
He's great.
He handled the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Superb.
Really well. When someone lobbed the second ball on.
Yeah.
I thought he handled that really well.
Yeah.
I think actually the refs are so smart to this. The English refs are great. I think there's too much professionalism within the referee ranks to be swayed that much. And if they are going to be swayed, it's going to be swayed by good behaviour, because that's what they want to incentivise. So I don't really put too much stock into the Stuart Barnes argument at all. Really. But it's an interesting way of thinking.
There's definitely play acting going on. There is.
Yeah.
There is
only one tactic that is proven effective for influencing referees over, well, several years now, and that is recording a 62-minute video accusing an individual ref of racism.
Two World Cups for that.
And that is proven to work, so everyone should just do that.
Two World Cups in a line series. Can't argue
well,
with that.
Well, admittedly, one of the World Cups was not influenced by
that. What I'm trying to say, actually?
Lions had another.
Phil's made a great point. What I'm trying to say is, if you're going to ad hoc annoy a referee, it's not going to work. But if you build a whole machinery around
it. Yeah, the institution is the destruction of referees.
And you do it over the course of what, 2 years? A four-year cycle of destroying referees on video. It will work and it is effective.
Exactly.
So it's whichever route you want to go, really.
Just on South Africa for a minute, that lovely moment at the end, but bearing in mind the goal-kicking issues he had only a few months ago.
Marnie Libbok.
Not that Libbok will care, because he's a World Cup winner, but lovely moment for him getting that last-minute injury time, final kick of the match to win it from the touchline.
Yeah. Did you see the end of that game as well?
Mm.
So there was a disallowed try for La Rochelle. La Rochelle scored to go, it would have put them 13 points up with 4 minutes left on the clock.
Yeah, there were loads of people from in Cape Town already in the car on the way home.
Yeah. So, and the try, I think the kick had already been La Rochelle, because La Rochelle on the clock were on doing 27 points.
Yeah, correct.
And then it got pulled back for a yellow card, probably correctly yellow card. No arms tackle, which led to a head-on-head. And then Stormers score with the last kick of the game to make it 19-20. Libbok from the touchline and nails it.
I tell you what, it is very fortunate that Sale Sharks got that win against Stade Francais, because the remaining games are Stormers and La Rochelle.
Ooh.
That is hell of an ask.
Where do they play Stormers away?
If you've got Stormers at home, you're all right.
Well, you should
Stormers away.
So La Rochelle at home, and
when's that La Rochelle game? That'd be good to go and watch.
They could get 0 points out of those two games.
Sunday 21st.
January. Nice.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the weekend before we go to Paris.
It is.
You coming, Jay? Can you work it?
I think so. I think I can.
Mm.
I think I can. So, yes. Did anyone see Tigers?
Yes.
Yeah.
This was a mighty impressive display, actually.
Wasn't it?
It really was. Because, again, the team that they put out... So it's not full second string in the same way that Sale was a full second string. But they rested all of their World Cup players, pretty much. And then they lost another England player, Ollie Hassel-Collins, shortly before the game, which meant their third choice fly half became their third choice fullback in Charlie Atkinson.
Yeah, he ended up with the yellow card. And also concerns me, because I was hoping he might kick on to be like the true number two and maybe the successor to Pollard. It doesn't look like he is. I think he's maybe...
No, and it's funny because a couple of years ago, if you'd have asked me who's got more talent or who I think he's going to be more of a success, Finn Smith or Charlie Atkinson, would have said...
Didn't listen to Dimes then, did you?
Dimes knows.
Dimes knew.
If only Dimes was managing a French club, it'd be such an easy decision.
Atkinson, I mean, he did all right. Yellow card was right.
Does that mean Leicester didn't beat your beloved Stade Francais? You haven't committed to
I've definitely not committed. I can't really... Yeah, not yet. I just can't... I can't get on board with the Gustard influence, and I can't get on board with the Lancaster influence for the two Paris teams. It's difficult for me. And, very difficult.
And Kremer's now not there.
Kremer's not there. Meanwhile, I absolutely love Ronald O'Gara. I love his attitude. But it's the transport links to La Rochelle just aren't working for me. If La Rochelle...
It's direct flights in the spring and summer.
But do you want us really go for a weekend in La Rochelle? I mean, maybe once, yeah, but like...
Go to a nice little cognac tasting.
Yeah, once.
Did they have, were they called vineyards when they make cognac or distillery?
Got no idea.
Distillery.
No idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Leicester. Archie Vans looks like he could be a player.
He looks all right.
Yeah.
Three tries.
Fairly handy.
Yeah, so this looked a little bit more like a first string Stade Francais team.
I don't really know what the first string Stade Francais team is. I know Marchant is in it, and I know Makalou is in it. That's about all. I did like the boy at 15.
Leo Barré, when he scored an absolute worldie.
Yeah. But he looked handy as well, like great rangy runner and rapid as well. But he was standing in at 10 and distributing quite a lot as well. He looked, I've never knowingly watched him before, but he looked very handy.
Yeah, being exposed to these French teams over the last couple of weeks, it is amazing how many good second-rate South Africans exist in the world. They would walk into almost every other international
team.
And most Premiership teams, and you don't know they even exist. Is Jamie Ward South African?
Don't know.
I suspect he is with that name. And he's obviously a very good player. There's so many props up and down the league. So I was looking at all the team sheets which were due to play the Premiership teams, and South African after South African after South African. Like, the depth that country produces, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
George Martin was class, I thought, today. I thought Jamie Shilcock put in a great effort. But actually, the real praise, in my mind, has to go to the replacements. Harry Wells, when he came on, was simply superb.
Yeah, his final turnover at the end.
Yeah, turnover. And the other guy that I like, who is that? Who's that young flanker that they brought on?
Yeah, I've seen him a couple of times.
He is an enormous boy.
Yeah.
Enormous.
Leone.
That's the one. So he was standing next to Makalou. And Makalou, I think, is a big lad.
By the way, is a big lad.
Unbelievable. I mean, we know he's fast. He's fast anyway.
He's such a good player. Yeah, he's such a dangerous player.
Did he go on? I think he got on the outside of Anthony Watson and Dan Kelly.
Yeah, down the left wing.
And just went, word, this is dangerous. So if it wasn't for the cover defence, he'd be in there. He's standing next to Makalou, who I know is a big boy. And he's just he's about the same height, but just bigger and broader.
Yeah.
And his first intervention is a steal. And he gets straight over the ball. Cheers.
He's a handy player. He's very young as well.
He's played he's played 20 odd games for Leicester, I think.
Has he really?
I think he's played quite a bit for them. He went on loan to Nottingham a few years ago when he was sort of 18, 19. But he's a proper talent.
Jeremy Ward, the 13 for Stade Francais.
Yep.
Born in Port Elizabeth.
There we go.
South Africa.
What's that, hammering?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
What's going on? Bit of construction upstairs.
Yeah, I'm always interested.
Does Phil need to go and oversee it?
No, just let him crack on. It'd be fine.
Is that your neighbours or is that?
It's probably
upstairs.
Rude.
No, it's upstairs.
Rudy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was going to say, Lester Etienne's absolute howler at the end was something to behold.
Oh, on the wing.
Do you see that, Tim?
Yeah.
Crossfield kick to win it.
Oh, I know.
Lands in his hands. I was like, I'll probably just throw something.
He was great when he came on as well.
Yeah, just throw
something. He was everywhere. So, all right, what games haven't we touched on?
Brief interlude. I'm sort of so smug at the minute that you two have got small children as we approach Christmas, which is wonderful and magical and all of that.
Oh, it's great.
But the amount of shit that's going to be in your houses this time next week.
All right, I've just told everyone, if you want to buy something, just buy a book. Like, nothing else. We don't need any more cheap plastic.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, please buy me the cheapest plastic stuff you can find.
Book or Lego for Thomas, which always
goes. Oh, nice, yeah. Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Cash. Bitcoin.
Cash.
some of those good Chinese app websites are great for knockoff Lego. You wouldn't know the difference.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That does make sense, actually, doesn't it?
There's a few. Yeah. I think there's a knockoff X-wing on my son's like bookshelf. A knockoff. What's it called?
I'm amazed,
what's the big thing in Star Wars? The Death Star.
Oh yeah. Oh, can you take the Lego for Thomas today?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yes. I'll take. I'll tell you what. I'll take one of them this week, and then one of them next week.
And if you are yours, do yours, JB. I'm talking to you here because I'm Phil. I know the answer will be yes. Do Annabelle and Lucy go and do Santa?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They do go and...
Yep. Well, yep. They'll be going, well, you know, well they'll do it this year. Last year went to Lapland in Windsor. Oh, is it Windsor? No.
Is that where Lapland is? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Lapland in a forest somewhere.
So they did it at, what's it called? The National Trust place near...
Oh,
Quarry Bank Mill.
Oh, okay, cool.
So... did that last weekend. We were actually discussing doing Lapland. I was like, both of us, because some load of Claire's friends have paid the X thousand pounds to go and sit 3 hours on a train, then 3 hours on a coach, then 3 hours on a transfer, and both of us agreed there is absolutely no way
Lapland.
Yeah, there is no way on earth we are ever doing Lapland.
I tell you the thing which really... So I went to my daughter's nativity. What a waste of time.
You actually had a secular Christmas performance?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, sorry, non-secular.
They go to a...
Non-secular.
A CV school.
Right, there you go.
Right. Proper ethics and all. what a waste of time. Like, I sat there and I just realised, this is not for me. It's not even for my daughter. It's for every middle-aged woman who just loves this stuff.
I got a bit choked up when I used to do the old Christmas performances.
I
enjoyed it. We had Thomas's first one.
So I've got a real issue with this. Like, it's very nice to have the occasional play. So I've had two plays, and I don't know if I spoke on the podcast before about this, their achievement ceremony, which is at the start of the year.
I think you did mention it
and they
briefly.
They just sung a rendition of We Are Simply the Best. And they're simply not the best. Right? There's no way that these kids... I mean, they're very nice kids. I love them dearly. But they're simply not the best. And they shouldn't be singing that they are simply the best. I'd much rather go to school. If they're going to show me something... I'm talking to Phil about this before. Why can't we have something competitive, like competitive spelling bee? Competitive maths? Some sort of quiz? Something where like they can actually show me what they have achieved. Don't tell me you're great. Show me you're great. And just this constant... It's just things to satisfy mothers. That's all it is. To satisfy smug mothers, or their smug children.
I liked the Christmas performances. I went and saw, although I go to the non-CV, the I can't remember, it's secular, that means non-religious.
Yeah, I think
so. I went to the secular school up the road where all the riff-raff go. my kids went there because it's around the corner from my house. And Louis, in his year six Christmas performance, was Eric Morecambe.
Why?
It was Eric Morecambe's character in some Morecambe and Wise thing where he was
good God.
And my daughter was spaceman number three.
No wonder you choked up. I'd cry if that was inflicted on me.
It was good.
I enjoyed it as well.
Spaceman number three. I tell you what, in the school play, Peter Pan was played by a girl. Why?
That's what they do in pantomimes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why they did it then.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Quite often, the main character in pantomimes, the main character is played by a woman as a male.
And oh, that's maybe why they did it.
And Peter Pan's one of them. It's like they have the widow twanky cross-dressing one.
That makes more sense.
Plays have
their place. Plays have their place, and they were very, very good. But I want to see them doing something competitive.
Well, you're just disappointed that you didn't get chance to sing We Are the Champions or Simply the Best after your sports day victory in the 100-yard dash.
I'm imagining that.
Everyone knew I was the best. It was
I'm imagining that scene in The Office when Ricky Gervais is doing the motivational talk in that little room and running around Simply the Best.
Yeah, it was similar.
Your victory.
have I got this right?
Sports day.
I'm just reading a headline here, but sorry, before we go back into that, this is a rugby story. Have you seen who's the new Fiji head coach?
See this.
If I didn't tell you, you could be guessing till next week.
I'm sure I saw this. But I can't remember.
It was Vern Cotter, wasn't it? So...
Because
what was Simon Raoulou?
Yeah, who's now gone to
But it was Vern Cotter before that, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but Simon Raoulou has gone to the World Rugby kind of elite coaching team or whatever it is.
They've gone for a dual code, former dual code international.
Chris Ashton.
Matt Rogerson.
Israel Flau.
Who is he?
Barry John Mather. Or Mather.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he coached.
I once met Barry John Mather. You got one England captain.
Yes, you did.
Against Wales, lost.
I met him because he was working... God, the last time I thought about Barry John Mather, he was working for Kukri. Selling stash, yeah.
Hang on. Where's he coached before?
I don't know. Barry John Mather.
I feel, as a rugby podcaster, with 10 years of podcasting, I would have heard of Barry John Mather coaching somewhere.
Yeah.
Other than just landing in Fiji.
He told Fiji Times, "I'm excited to work with all the great guys here and build on the success, blah, 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 blah. Beating England or Australia should become the expectation from the fans." But formerly the performance director at the New South Wales Institute of Sport.
Interesting.
Played once for England rugby under Clive Woodward.
Yeah, so
remember him in one cap.
I would be very cautious if I was Barry
so that's
John.
It. So he's not been coaching rugby.
So he's on his Wikipedia. His Wikipedia has a coaching section, which said he became. So he was appointed coach of Blackpool RFC in North Lank 1.
Solid.
Following this, he became head coach of Heaton Moor Rugby.
What? Our local rivals?
In 2000. So that is
like
Heaton Moor.
Level 7.
Or lower, yeah. In 2006, 17 years ago, he was appointed academy coach at Guinness Premiership side London Irish.
Okay.
That is the end of his coaching section of his Wikipedia page.
Amazing.
His management section says, on 11th of June 2009, it was announced Mather would become the RFL head of player development. So that would be similar to academy coach at London Irish. As part of his role, he's also the England team manager. So team management plus player development. And then in 2014, between 2014 and 2014 and 2020, he was general manager of the new NSWRL, New South Wales Rugby League, based in Australia. So he has been doing that side of things.
Well, I mean, it is important. There are guys out there who are not particularly great coaches, but are good managers. Mm. And that's maybe where he steps
and
in.
And maybe with people as incredibly naturally gifted as Fijian rugby players, you just need someone who can organise things.
To run a programme.
Yeah. So run a programme with specific skills and attack and scrum.
And I imagine the man you mentioned earlier, Mark Evans, would have had a big role to play in selecting that person.
I imagine so, yeah. Mm. So,
or might have certainly had some input.
Yeah, so, the only thing I'd be cautious of is his statement, when he says, beating Australia and England should be the expectations of the norm, or whatever it is. Because it's all very well to say that if you've got a track record of constantly beating England and Australia, but if you've never done it before...
Well, I think that was his point. It's like they've started to beat Australia and compete with England.
Yeah, but if he's never done it before...
No.
You know, as a coach of another nation, maybe don't say that, because he probably wouldn't be a guy that I'd ask, how do you do it? Mm. Because he's not done it. But yeah, it's... I mean, Harlequins have a... Well, head coach or someone who you've never heard of. You would have heard of him, but he doesn't coach day-to-day.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Who is the team manager? Is he team manager or is he actually director of rugby? Director.
He's something funny like that. He's not a day-to-day coach.
Yeah,
but he is. I know exactly the guy you mean. Now. He was from Cardiff.
Yeah,
sure he had a job sort of like GM or something for a little while.
Yeah,
there's a few other examples of that where you get a coach who's gone. You know, into I guess Razzie would be that. South Africa, but yeah, running a program is important. Maybe that's what he's doing. But I've not heard of him doing anything coaching wise for a long time. Well, ever since Heaton Moor.
And the only other
Heaton Moor.
Billy Millard.
The only other not the only other. There's others, but the one big other story off the rugby pitch in terms of movement. It looks like, and I don't know how this is going to go down badly, I would suggest, but Bath have been gazumped by Leinster for the signature of R.G. Snaiman.
That is a large story.
Yeah, for someone who's barely played other than for South Africa. Doesn't really make that much sense. And when the IRFU are so kind of crucial for moving the piece around the chessboard, it seems weird.
Well, just this, that first game that he plays in a Leinster jersey against
if he ever plays,
is going to be spicy.
So, on him, yeah, it's an interesting one. How does the Irish policy work in relation to second rows? Are you allowed one second row, or is it two shirts? Is it two numbers? Because it's one scrum half, isn't it, out of the four? So when, that's what I'm trying to say. Sorry, I'm making no sense, am I? When Pienaar left Ulster, it was because some other James from Gibson Park. Yeah, who came, who was not Irish qualified, then became Irish qualified. You can only have one.
Ruben Pienaar, by the way, who was still playing this weekend for Sharks.
Was he playing for Sharks this weekend?
Good lad.
Fair play.
What's
so
a guy?
Is it one second row they're allowed in the league, or is it two second rows because there's two second row slots?
I don't even know if it is that hard and fast.
I don't know if it's hard and fast, but...
It might just be the IRFU.
No, it actually is hard and fast. What? That's why Pienaar had to go.
So, as in, I know they made Pienaar go, but I don't know if it is written down anywhere. I've never seen it written down anywhere, but they...
You're exactly right.
Oh, Mike Leeds.
Sorry.
There you go.
They definitely made Pienaar go. But whether it is a hard and fast rule that says one shirt, two shirts, can there only ever be 15... foreign qualified players? No, probably not. They probably can have more than that in total
and
across the four different teams.
Anything to do with Jean Kleyn no longer being Irish?
Potentially.
So they had one Irish second row and one South African second row. Your Irish second row becomes South African again. So just move the other South African across the way, because he is a big draw. He's one of the few names in rugby who's a real big name.
I don't know if that would have made any difference. I can't imagine the IRFU would care that Munster had two.
Yeah, I think they would, because you want to be developing players across the nation, I think.
Maybe it is to do with that.
And they've already paid him a lot of money to get healthy, so may as well keep him in Ireland.
€500,000 he's going to be getting to go to Leinster, apparently.
Very nice.
Which, yeah, that is going to go down badly
in the southwest. It is. Can I just quickly address thing which I spoke about last week, which was the concussion lawsuit?
Well, should we wrap up the rugby?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, we've not touched on Saracens.
I was going to say, Jack, we've got an email here, contactedchasers@gmail.com, which just kind of anything we might have missed, this might spark a thought. Summary of the weekend from Jack.
Cheers, Jack.
Northampton can win with their kids. Sale can't, but they got mighty close at the RDS. Sarries won, but look porous. Yeah, we haven't mentioned that one. Sarries did look good, porous. Mentioned Ollie Hartley. Fine. We kind of...
Yeah, good Saracens, good going forward.
Good win. Yeah,
Not so good in defence.
Yeah, Gonzalez looks good.
He does, yeah.
Bath won, but also looked porous. Agree. Bears got mauled. Yes, they did, but Bordeaux look very, very good this year.
We didn't really touch on that other than to say Bears Pinot was fantastic.
Oh, I would like to say this. Isn't it awesome to see Benny Tapwai tearing it up?
Benny
Taps. A bit of a Premiership legend in my mind, even though he's not been there for a long, long time. Bath, yeah. I always liked Bath.
Most of the time he was in England.
Injured at Harlequins.
It's a bit like Francis Saley.
No, injured at Harlequins, dynamised at Bath. He was very good at Bath. Because he went from... He was
decent in a bad Bath team.
Oh,
it was a very
could be
bad
anyone.
Yeah.
It could be Miles Reed. It could be Bayless.
Houston.
Yeah, yeah.
He went
the other way to Jamie Roberts, didn't he? So Jamie Roberts was in Harlequins, and Bath like, oh my god, big shiny Jamie Roberts, we'll have him. And they sent Benny Taps to Harlequin. Yeah, to Harlequins. Yeah. I don't know if he went straight to Bordeaux from there, but I think Benny Taps is a good test. So if you're watching that game, look, it's Benny Tapwai, Premiership. Ex-Premiership player, it means that you know your Premiership rugby. It's a good test.
Yeah.
And then he says...
You played for the Sharks for a bit, didn't you?
He went somewhere strange. But he was really good.
Just on old Premiership legends popping up again. It was great to see Talusa Vianu.
Yes, in a Sale shirt.
So Jack goes on to say, Quinns fought, but were eventually condemned to lose. Yes. Paul Gustard's Stad felt agonisingly short against Leicester. Rob Baxter is Sir Alex Ferguson and The Undertaker, because Chiefs keep coming back from the dead. And he says, commiserations to Tim's beloved Bayonne. Yes, I didn't want to mention that one. And congratulations to Phil's beloved Ulster.
Big win.
Who are pride.
Did you see the Glasgow try, the number 8 scored? Where he gassed the winger?
Matter.
No.
No, it wasn't Matt. Oh, no, he's Edinburgh.
He's Edinburgh. No, Miller.
Oh, yeah, Wheels.
Who? He said he's an X7s player.
Yeah.
And he gassed. I don't know who it was. I don't know who your winger was. But he was left for dead by number eight. It was awesome.
Yeah, Bayonne, it's all about next year. We're building a nice, we're building a handy team. We would have had, who's the player Bayonne would have had last year, except if they hadn't, or the year before last, if they hadn't got relegated? Someone very, very good. I can't remember. It got cancelled. But now we're getting Mateo Carreras, so that's all good.
Yeah, that'll be handy. He won't be getting gassed by anyone.
No, not a chance.
Who was the player? That rings a bell.
Yeah, he was. I think it was an English... There's a big player going to be going to Bayonne, but I can't. Anyway, it got cancelled. Doesn't matter.
The only other game I don't think we've mentioned at all, which I've not really seen anything of, Lyon very, very narrowly beat the Bulls at home.
Yeah, I didn't.
29-28.
Nothing's it.
So I think that's rugby ticked off. What about local rugby?
I've not seen any scores. I don't want to because I think.
What about your beloved Aylesbury?
Aylesbury drew. Aylesbury drew 17-all against Old Haberdashians, whose club president apparently knows you, Tim, and has been drinking with you.
That could be anyone.
That could be anyone, actually.
No, he might have mentioned, I went drinking with some of the boys that play for the team.
Ah, maybe that was it.
It was the boys from Old Haberdashers who put me up in Nice.
Ah, I see.
Let me park their van at their bond lair of a place and invited me to their pool parties with...
Oh, that is cool.
With Swedish waitresses who they invited up from the bars.
Yes! More...
It was pretty cool, but yeah, they don't train. That's the team we mentioned a few weeks ago, the non-training team.
Perfect.
And how did Marlowe get on in the same league? I need to find this out now. I know that Tok H, they've not been doing too well, have they?
I don't think we won this week.
No.
I got a phone call. Can you play? We really are desperate for players this week. I couldn't do it.
And you let the team down.
I just couldn't do it. I said I'm unavailable for 4 weeks.
You wouldn't do it, not couldn't.
I couldn't do it. And believe you me, I'm not a man that says no often to rugby, and I just couldn't do it.
But then I realised it was
one of the other lads' weddings. I thought, bloody hell, I'm not cancelling my plans because you've all gone to a bloody wedding. No, unacceptable. So
Marlowe got beaten by Chobham. I don't know why. That's just a team name I find quite entertaining.
Chobham,
and I'm going to have a look up Didsbury Tok H's.
I don't want to know this. I'm really not looking forward to it because I know who we're playing. We're playing at Orwinions, and they are so hard. If they put out a full team, it might have been a really, really big score against us.
Okay, the result was... Oh, competitive. Old Orwinions 36, Tok H 28.
Oh.
Disappointing result, but...
Broughton Park?
They beat Warrington.
Yeah, we lost to Warrington.
It was the Christmas jumper day, and it was a bit of a good, quite a good knees up at the club.
Oh, nice. So. Good.
Yeah.
Right.
There.
Right. Let me talk about this concussion stuff.
Yeah, go on. What do you want to say?
Just last week, I gave you the, sort of my angle of concussion stuff, and I think there were a few things which I was concerned about. The first thing was exploitation of vulnerable players. And when I said vulnerable players, what I meant by that is people... Well, people who've come out of the game not in the best shape on the other side, who I think this concussion lawsuit is attractive to. I subsequently spoke to an actual player who is going through the process with Ryland's solicitors, and he gave me a completely different spin on it, and he gave me some good information as to understanding why these players wanted to sue World Rugby and the authorities in general. And it was refreshing because, being candid, when I'm looking for information, I tend to look for information which backs up what I want to think anyway. Everyone does it. I'm no different. So, as a consequence, I'd never actually spoke to anyone who's had a good word to say about this concussion lawsuit. I mean, have either of you two?
I've
never really spoke to anyone who's in favour of it. Does that make sense? Like,
oh, yeah, I'm not going to describe them in the way you describe them, but all those Twitter accounts.
Yeah, but they're not... I mean, they'll say things like, the game needs to change because we've been sued. But to be fair, not many people say it's right to do... This lawsuit is correct and they should be doing this because X, Y, Z. Do you see what I mean? So there's two different things there. A lot of the Twitter accounts that are saying they want to change the game are using this as cover, but they're not justifying why the cover exists.
Yeah, so I've not spoke to anyone, and I've not been actively speaking to people about this. I've not spoke to anyone who's been like, this is a big positive thing. This is the change the game needs.
Yeah.
Kind of angle.
So the player that I was speaking to would not fall into the category of a vulnerable individual, a very impressive individual. We spoke for about an hour and a half. And he was explaining to me the reason that these players want to do it is because they believe there has been negligence from World Rugby. They believe that they can prove it. And effectively what we've got is this problem where, if you imagine sort of like a nexus of where professionalism and the increase in physicality met the increase of knowledge. And I think there's sort of like maybe mid-2000s, something like that, when there probably is enough evidence out there and rugby hasn't quite got caught up. That to me seems like if there's going to be a problem area, mm-hmm. it's going to be there. It's not going to be now. It's not going to be before that. It's going to be there.
Yeah.
So you've got all of these pros playing multiple games and lads being sent back on and an incomplete data set at ground level, but maybe a little bit more was known by World Rugby. And their central claim is, if we'd have known all these risks, we might not have taken the risk.
Yeah, so some people definitely would have done.
Yeah, I agree.
Not everyone would have done.
Yeah. I mean, I know myself well enough to know that a 20-year-old JB would definitely have taken that risk.
Yeah, and I 100% would have as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends what risk.
We still take it now.
Huh? Yeah.
Probably people do.
But you do, Jay.
Well, yeah. But to be fair, I've never been knocked out. You know, I've never had, sustain. Because and the other thing as well, it's really important to stress, I play level 7. The reason I play level 7 is I'm not brave enough or good enough to play level 2. Or, mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the guys playing like level, there is definitely a problem, and I keep forgetting this when I'm talking about this case, and we all forget, there is 100% a problem at the highest level of the game.
100%.
With
and brain injuries. I that's what I detest about the one brush.
Yeah, exactly. So just a few interesting facts. A few interesting points of view. First, he wasn't particularly happy with the way that I described the players because it made it sound a little bit like they're all chasing the money. I never said that. I don't believe that. I do think there are some very sincere guys, like the guy I was talking to, who actually do think it is important that.
And we spoke last week saying there will be some of these individuals, hopefully not many, but some who will require significant levels of care throughout their life going forward. And I think all of us and anyone involved in the game would hope that they and their families get the support that they need.
I don't know if I mean, I hope they get the support that they need. This is a really difficult one for me. I hope they get the support that they need. However, at whose expense? And so that's the question, isn't it?
That is a different... Yeah, we all hope they get the support that they need.
So, I mean, the lesson to be learned here is if you're going to engage in the game of rugby, you need to know when to walk away. That'd be the first thing that you know. And you also need to put a lot of money aside in case these issues arise in the first place. But I don't think it's fair necessarily to build a massive liability on rugby to take away from the players who are currently playing and enduring the risk, the players that have previously played and endured the risk. That, to me, does not seem fair. But on the other hand, if there was negligence and the authorities covered up, there is an actual case
yeah.
And that's why there is a court case to establish if that happened. And I, for me, that's okay. So that's the first thing. The second thing was some of the coverage in the press was not particularly fair in terms of. Do you remember there was a story that Rylands got a telling off by the master? Now, the master is the judge that is the arbitrator between the two sides as they get their respective cases together. So two things happened. It's been going on so long that one master retired and they've been replaced by a second master, and that they had 12 players whose medical records were not fully disclosed because they hadn't got all of the information yet. So they submitted like 5,000 pages of full medical information for all the other players, but 12 were incomplete, and that's what the big hoo-ha was all about. So not
was that just an administrative thing?
No, they just were fairly late to the case and they hadn't.
Yeah, as in it was just administrating their test results, their medical information.
Yes, and also because the masters had changed, one master did not require all the medical disclosure and the second one did. Mm-hmm. So the goalposts were changed somewhat. So that's what I understand to have happened there. However, I still maintain that there will be players who are looking at this for money, but not all the players, and that's important.
Yeah.
That will happen in every...
Definitely.
You didn't say last week that all the players were looking for money.
No, but I can see how it would come across like that. So I do want to... It is important that you do mention...
Well, I want to know, did the person you spoke to say one of the big thrusts of the conversation last week was, I wonder how many players were assessed and were excluded.
Yeah. I asked this question. I did ask this question, and he wasn't able to provide me with that information. And I don't suspect he would do. I think
no.
It wouldn't be exactly a fair question to ask him. That's a question for the medical experts, I think.
If I were cross-examining this whole thing, that's one thing I would be asking the question.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that will be asked. And interestingly, I was talking to a litigation solicitor about this, and he was saying it's very common as well to try and pollute the applicant pool. So you've got to be careful who you accept, because say if you're doing, I don't know, there's a cosmetic product which is really dangerous or something, and then you're trying to find claimants for it. What the cosmetic company might do is put in fake claimants to distort your pool to say, oh, well, we threw in this guy. Did we not joke about that last week?
Yeah.
So that is like a very real thing. So I'm sure all of these things will be thought of by the litigation experts on World Rugby's side. And the last thing was, and this is by far the most interesting in my mind, because it confirms what I think, and I love confirmation bias. But they were very explicit. He was very explicit that neither he nor any of the other people in this lawsuit want the game of rugby to change, right? Other than the medical care, but they don't want the game to change itself. And this just really drove home to me something, which is, I am absolutely certain that this is a serious issue. But it's been used by the authorities to change the game to what they want it to be.
No, I think they're reacting to this case rather than using this case. I think they're trying to... So if they face a liability, if there is a liability that they end up facing or shaking hands and agreeing on, which I really hope they dig their heels in and set the bar threshold very, very high to before they part with any money. But I think they're actually trying to prevent further ones down the line. Like draw a line in the sand, basically saying, well, through the laws, nothing beyond this date will get paid a penny for.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't work, right? Because what these players are arguing for is disclosure. They wanted the information to make the decisions. They didn't want a change of behaviour or a change of game. They didn't want a different game.
What they're going to need to prove is that that information existed and was withheld from them.
Yeah.
Because you can't hold someone liable for not knowing.
Yeah, but that's a separate issue to what I'm talking about now, which is, what do they want going forward? They don't want to destroy the game.
No, but
they don't want to change the laws.
What I'm saying
the authorities want to do
it. No, in terms of the authorities, I honestly think they're just trying to build a... What's it called when you cut a load of trees down to stop a fire?
Fire break.
They're trying to build a fire break.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I don't think that is the case. Because for the longest time, people have been trying to persuade us that rugby is all about evasion and skill. Wouldn't it be great if we offloaded more? No, it wouldn't. as I mentioned about school plays, we've got a whole world set up to appeal to middle-aged, middle-class women. And rugby authorities are basically doing the same thing, right? How many times do you hear, well, if we don't appeal to mothers, the game will die? I'm like, no, if you start appealing to mothers, the game will die.
Do you know, I've got a perfect thing to go on from this. If you've summarised the points,
I just wanted to make the point that if you've got something to tell me about this concussion case, no matter which side you're on, feel free to tell me. And if I think it's important or it's a point of view you need to hear, I will definitely talk about it.
Richard Vase has contacted us. contactedchasers@gmail.com. He says he's sent a link to an article from this fella called Neil. I'll get the surname in a second when I open up the link. But he was involved at Sedba Rugby. And is a really good thinker about schools rugby. And this does kind of build on and expand upon or take in a slightly different direction.
I've got a feeling that I know about this.
So it's an article that was published a few days ago. Neil Rawlings.
And, I know that name.
And he says, for the great majority of schools who play rugby, this season is in its final days. This is an article in a big education website. Few maintain a two-term programme through the teeth of the winter. The weather may not be better after Christmas, but... blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it's not an easy time for school rugby or the coaches running it. Safety concerns, bad news stories are abound. In previous eras, the challenge was to get 15 boys to score more points than the other school down the road. Now, this is the easy part compared to the demands of endless compliance, head injury concerns and nervous parents.
Yep.
Singing on the bus returning from the match has been replaced by checking the seatbelts and confirming the return time. But it's not all bad news. Despite predictions to the contrary, many boys continue to love the game. The regular routine of training and playing provides... a high point for the autumn term for them. Weekend contest eagerly anticipated, and the camaraderie and teamship still enrich young lives. Playing with my mates retains an internationally rewarding currency. Anyway, it goes on and goes on. And so it's just kind of putting a different perspective out there. And what he says is, yeah, here we go. The schools game should not be confused with the professional version. The RFU has robust data measuring risk levels throughout the game. This clearly demonstrates that school-age players are at significantly less risk. At under-13s and below, it's likely no game has any greater risk profile than any other, and the playground is actually the most injury-prone environment for children. He makes that point. He says, there never was a golden age in which all boys loved rugby. The general point he's making is, it's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone.
And we should embrace that.
Yeah.
And he says, many other games thrive in niches of various sizes. Some are shrinking, others expanding. And that has always been the case. The future for school rugby is to accept this as the club game does. The fact that more adults play club football than rugby doesn't prevent either from flourishing or improving the lives of its participants. Neither has to erode the other to succeed. Sport is not a zero-sum game. Blah, 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 blah. But basically accepting the reality and creating a really good environment for the people who rugby is for and who do like it. And that's contrary to what you're talking about with the RFU, where they're trying to make it a sport for everybody. Whereas this guy's saying, firstly, it's not dangerous, like people are telling you. Secondly, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
It's really important we talk about the facts of rugby, which is the pro game, I do think, is legitimately dangerous, which is why we pay the money and which is why it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's just not for everyone. It's a terrifying prospect.
It's like the gladiatorial combat of the past, isn't it?
Definitely not for everyone, because you have to be a certain size or phenomenally skillful or phenomenally fast to play it.
When you get, I never said this before, but just after COVID, when there were no fans in the stadium, and you
for getting in and out of grounds.
Amazing. Like, you could watch the game in silence almost. Well, except for, there's no crowd noise.
Yeah, you hear what the players are saying.
Oh my God, you could hear the contacts. And you thought, this is absolutely brutal. It's terrifying. As like a guy that plays a sport, it's not the sport that I play. And you don't appreciate that until there's no one in the crowd and you can hear every single thing, every single crunch.
The bone on bone.
Yeah. One of the most disturbing things about all these law changes is it is effectively to keep the amount of games high. The only way to limit concussions and to avoid what's happened,
which only needs to be done at the elite level of the game.
Yeah, elite level.
This is what keep coming back to, and this article points out.
It's less rugby. They just can't be playing any more than 10 games. That's the only thing. But they are doing everything in their power to make sure they can get all their revenue. And
there you go. Growth. I think that's
and
more.
That's it.
That's what it's more about.
But the club game itself, as in the lower level game, does not need changing. It is not a risky pursuit. Well, it is risky. It's more risky than going to the park, for sure.
And it isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
And I want rugby administrators, it isn't for everybody. So don't change the game to make it a version that might be more enticing to a greater number of people, because the people that love rugby and have always played rugby will not want to play that sport.
Have you played any T1 yet?
What's that? T1.
Touch game.
I'm waiting for spring, then I'm going to be all over the T1.
Yeah, I'm going to really put in a big T1 pre-season.
T1 Tuesdays. T1 Tuesdays, Rugby X Thursdays.
We could have T1 tours instead of instead of our tier 2 tours.
Imagine having to play T1. Just the branding of it makes me sick.
But we are going. So potentially we're going to Northampton for the Bayonne game on the 12th of Jan.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Really,
that sounds good. That Friday night. I like that.
I'd be up for that.
And then go and see Big Courts.
Yep.
And then end of January, Racing 92 versus Toulouse.
100% in for that.
Come on, Jay.
I'm going to be buying my flights tomorrow. You've got
to make that work. I'll confirm tomorrow.
You've got to make that work.
Confirm tomorrow. Even if you don't have to confirm tomorrow, the flights are relatively cheap.
The flights are cheap, mate.
How much are the flights?
Decide on the day.
No, the flights aren't the problem. The childcare's the problem.
Yeah.
But you can, as in, I'll book my flights tomorrow. You can book your flights in 4 weeks' time. Because they're £120 at the moment.
Decide on the day.
Return from Manchester.
I've always thought, dog daycare is only £15. If I gave them £20 to just look after these two girls, would they do that?
And a bag of sweets for them.
A bag of sweets. Like, they're fine. They love dogs. You've got loads of playthings around here. You just need to look after them for 12 hours.
12 hours in Paris.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then
so that's the Saturday night
and
game.
Then maybe Lisbon in
maybe Lisbon.
I'd love to go back to Lisbon. I've never had a better weekend on £200 or however much it was.
Well, it's
so that was just £200 of Iberian ham, wasn't it?
that was in Madrid.
Oh yes,
yeah. For me.
No. So I lost all of my cards right on the first night. I'm sure I was pickpocketed. Sure of it. But I know. Yeah.
Definitely.
And then Phil paid it all on his credit card and sent me the bill.
And it was 2 days of
£200 for 2 days of boozing.
It wasn't far off that, you know.
It was. I think it was
food and everything.
We ate and drank for 2 full days plus the Sunday. We had like a midday flight on the Sunday.
You sure you didn't
two full days of
pickpockets and Portuguese
eating and drinking
restaurants,
ordering bottles of everything.
Wow,
having oysters, having really good seafood.
Yeah, you'd have some great.
And oysters. I think it was just over £500 for the two of us, for all of that for two days.
Wow,
so really, really good.
So you've not been away with this for a little while.
It was like three euros of beer in loads of places.
But the general thing is now, wake up in the morning, you have to do at least 5K. So we did our 5K around Lisbon, which is horrific because Phil's a great runner and I'm a terrible runner and I hate every second of it. And then we descended into this market in our sweaty gym kit.
Timeout market.
Had a beer, had another beer, had 7 beers, had 8 beers, then went home.
I think our first drink was actually a whiskey sour because of the egg white.
Oh yeah, protein.
Protein.
as a joke. That was like a 10 a.m. whiskey sour.
Yeah, it was.
What I do remember, and a couple of days I can cope with you two, but I remember that trip to New York.
Oh, that was great fun.
It was great fun. But I remember on day 4.
Was that when we went for the brunch?
I just remember. Waking up. I think I called home and I was like, I don't think I can do this again.
I tell you, the best day of drinking I've had. The best day of drinking I've had, I'm pretty sure, is Philadelphia Day. Like, to Reading Terminal Market. Tell you who we're with. With Lauren Smith from BT Sports. So she joined us. We started drinking in Reading Terminal Market. And then she left. And we went into an area of Philadelphia, which is just the coolest area. We went to the old pub.
We were watching the Eagles.
Yeah, Eagles were away at Kansas City.
And we were mixing up between, it was like a couple of rounds in an old like sports bar, American football. And then we'd managed to stumble across like a really nice wine bar and have like oysters and a couple of glasses of white wine. And then back to the Spit and Sawdust American football pub.
Do you know, I would be well up for going just straight to Philadelphia for more beers, actually. I mean, I've just got off getting over a hangover today, and about 4 hours ago I said I'll never drink again, and now I'm flying across the Atlantic.
It's context dependent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, regaling these stories of boozing around the world.
Oh God, it's terrible.
It's been a while.
A podcaster.
The group chat where you will be allowed in when you commit to the end of January.
Is it a group chat?
It's a group chat for Paris. And
you're getting some. Oh God, Dave Mack is going hard at the moment.
Dave Mack is.
Dave Mack going?
Yeah.
Huh. He's in.
Dave Mack's going, but the chat is that we're in Paris. Lads have been sharing Instagram accounts of devilishly handsome, well dressed, middle aged French men. And we're sort of up in the attire for Paris.
Oh, glorious. So just so you know, so the expectation is, and to be fair to myself, I did do it in Dubai. I went straight to a CrossFit gym. In Malaga, Phil took me on a run. And I don't know if Phil was expecting what was going to happen, but we decided to run to the castle in Malaga.
That was
simply
steep.
The most painful thing I've
done. That was
done
so
in
steep.
Years. I don't know how high. Probably wasn't that.
Probably, yeah.
60 metres, maybe?
It was more than 60 metres, definitely. 150 metres.
We're going to have to do
just
some,
straight
like,
up.
Some sprint intervals around the Champs-Élysées.
Well, the best thing is, decide where you want to go drinking and run around there so it's like a little recce. And then come back and then you're all prepped.
Well, the house you could be staying in with us is in a very nice part of Paris.
Leave it with me.
Very, very dangerous roads around there as well. Mm. Got to get it up early if you want to run on those roads.
Is that right? Hmm. Yeah, okay, we'll sort it out. I'm in.
I'll tell you what, so...
I think I'll have a date.
27th.
Get that sorted. So so we're doing a top 14 tour. We've got a tier 2 tour in the pipeline. And I'll tell you what, let's talk about all this and have a little Christmas boozy Patreon podcast next weekend.
Next weekend. That's a really good idea. Early morning on the... Sunday. Sunday's Christmas Eve.
Sunday's Christmas Eve. No,
Paris Toulouse, yeah?
Yes,
27th. Yes.
Oh, so yeah, we could do Saturday night.
Could do no, I can't do Saturday night.
Okay.
Can do Sunday, but I imagine JB's the same. There'll be
do Sunday morning.
There'll be a CrossFit WOD at your place.
Oh, we'll probably. Yeah. Then we can do
a Christmas Eve WOD, like 12 days of Christmas type WOD is what they normally do. So I'll do that, and then I'll be free from about 10:30.
Oh, perfect.
Do that. Yeah.
11 o'clock.
So fantastic.
Can have a couple of beers Christmas Eve.
So what are the fixtures next week?
Great.
Back to the Prem, innit?
Premiership Rugby. We have, Friday and Saturday, so no Sunday games. So Friday, we've got Newcastle host Bristol.
Do not care about either of these teams in any way.
Yeah, not good.
If possible, I'd quite like Newcastle to record their first win.
Yeah, same.
And then not win again ever.
Do you see Alex Codling was not coaching them last week? He was having, really? He was attending to a personal matter, and this is after he had that
rant about
emotional the owners. Post-match interview.
Yeah.
So
now let's Codling leave Harlequins for similar things like that.
Not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think he's back at the helm. So yeah, that's two DORs under pressure, or two head coaches or DORs, whatever.
Except one of them will get a handsome payout should should they have to leave.
Yeah.
Or even though I think he should be done for gross misconduct.
And then it's the Master and Apprentice Bowl.
Yeah, top of the table battle. Or
I
certainly
hate to say
two
this.
Top four teams.
Mark McCall against one of his old charges.
If Sale can do this, right? And dependent, I say if Sale can do this, if Saracens bring a full strength Saracens team. So Sale have beaten Saracens in the past at the AJ Bell.
Yeah, last year. I was there.
Yeah. But it's not usually a full-strength Saracens
team. It was not a full-strength Saracens team last year.
And the full-strength Saracens team has been beaten in the AJ Bell under Steve Diamond in the past. But under Alex Sanderson, it has not. So every time these two teams have met full-strength, Saracens have always had the better of them. So if they could win this, it'd be massive. And I don't think they will, because I think Saracens just know how to get under Sale's skin a little bit too much. If they come full strength, I suspect Saracens will win, which upsets me.
I think Sale at home.
I think Sale as well. Tough place to go to.
Oh, Christ, there's some cracking games.
There's a couple of real good games on Saturday as well.
I'm going Bristol and Sale for Friday. And then Saturday.
Probably, yeah.
And then Saturday, Exeter, Leicester, Gloucester, Saints.
These are three cracking games.
Bath, Quins.
Exeter, Leicester. That'll be a great game.
Yeah.
Gloucester Saints.
Waldron Bowl. Salvey Bowl.
Yeah.
That's about it. Anyway.
I'm trying to think of someone else. No. And they play... So all three of these teams match up really nicely. So Exeter Leicester is going to be combative.
Yeah.
Two very systemised teams.
I'm going to go Leicester, who've rested up their first team.
Yeah, fair point.
Exeter
on a bit of a high, though. Long-standing unbeaten run for Exeter.
Was it like 9 games or something?
Unbeaten at home as well is a very long period of time.
Yeah, Leicester Tigers coming down with all of their stars.
All their
Exeter
World Cup
Chiefs
stars rested.
On a bit of a run now, and people start to believe in them. If Exeter Chiefs can get that ground rocking again, I mean, the problem with the Exeter is I don't really know how good they are. They're definitely not at their ceiling, but they're getting pretty good. So how much better can they get? Right now, I think they would probably lose to Leicester, but there's always a chance that they'll beat them because they're getting better every week.
So I think Leicester will win this.
I think Leicester.
Because of the resting, and it matches up nicely for Leicester.
I agree.
I'm just searching for Exeter's last defeat at home. And no. Here we go. Last defeat at home, Saturday, October the 22nd, 2022.
There you go.
Goodness me.
Against Saracens.
So we're saying it might be that. I'm saying Leicester.
I'm saying a first defeat in over a year at home.
I think you might be right.
Then Gloucester host Northampton, which I think Saints will just be too strong for Gloucester.
Gloucester looked a lot better
but
on Friday night against Claremont.
There'll be a lot of points in this. A load of points because Saints do quite like to concede, historically. Gloucester like to attack, and Gloucester aren't really up to much defensively. There'll be a lot of points scored.
Gloucester's defence looked better. Their driving maul was back. Zach Mercer was very good. Santi Carreras at 10 was great.
Is that Zach Mercer's debut for them?
No, it's his first game back since he's been injured.
Did he play at the start of the season?
Yes, I think so.
when the World Cup was going on.
Understood. Right, yeah, there's going to be lots of points scored, and I would say Northampton based on form.
I'd say Northampton, and then
this is going to be
Bath Quins. This will be, so this is the televised game. This will be dynamite. Bath versus Quins. These teams do match up really nicely.
Christ, I don't know.
That and Sale Saracens are the hardest to call, I think.
Finn v Marcus.
Yeah.
Well, the halfback pairings in general are really competitive.
Yeah.
I don't really know where the point of difference is between these two teams. Like, so both front rows are excellent when they are starting front rows.
Yeah.
I don't like Bath's second row, to be fair. The difference in these teams, I believe, will be the replacement Bath front rows. I think that's where they have an advantage.
Mm. Bringing on three Saffers.
Yeah.
At least two Saffers.
Mm.
Three Saffers wander on and they start. Yeah, that will be the difference. As for points scored, oh, I don't know.
A million.
Yeah, I even think about the wings. So, Cockenasinghe is more sort of traditional finisher, whatnot. Caden Murley in line, if they go Caden Murley in line.
Murley went off injured.
Oh, well, they might go with Oscar Beard, who's absolute dynamite then.
Yeah, or...
Nick David?
But yeah, Nick David, loose liner.
Nick David, loose liner. Yeah, they've got...
Tyrone Green.
Yeah, still got loads of options, and they work hard. But there again, Bath swingers of... I mean, we were speaking about Will Muir earlier on, and what was my quote? Very rarely is he on a field and not the best winger.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player.
I don't know why, because Bath are at home, aren't they? I just have a feeling for Quins, and I have a feeling for man of the match performance from Andre Esterhazen.
Mm.
I think he could be a point of difference.
Yeah.
There is a possibility of all away wins this week. I think Leicester are favourites, Northampton are favourites, yeah, Bristol are favourites. Saracens and Quins are close as well.
That's worth a fiver.
Mm. A few quid on that. As a little Christmas treat.
Nice. Right.
There we go.
So we're going to be doing a Patreon podcast next weekend as well as a pod, which will be... Oh, yeah, all the games are on Saturday and Friday, so we will be able to talk about the Premier games. Brilliant.
Yes.
You can help keep the lights on, support the podcast, show your appreciation, and also get prepared for that boozy Patreon special next weekend. Contact Ted Chasers.
A boozy Patreon special?
Well, we'll have a couple of festive tipples while we're...
What are we going to do for next week's patron?
That's what I was saying.
Oh, I see.
Well, I mean, we could if we do it in that order. So we start having a couple of light ones on the regular pod, and then
why don't we have a look back at the most controversial and angry moments of 2023?
How many episodes? A ten episode series for that on Patreon? Then
the biggest outrages in rugby 2023.
Yeah, I like it actually.
For Patreon.
I quite like that. Well, speaking of which, one of them might be about Stephen Jones's article about Marcus Smith in the Times today.
Oh, not read it.
He's got a real chip on his shoulder about Marcus Smith and love for Owen Farrell. I have a love for Owen Farrell.
But not a hatred of Marcus
but
Smith.
But he's kind of, it's weird.
Zero-sum game in his mind.
Yeah, in his mind. It's odd. Anyway, so yeah, we'll do that next week. And patreon.com/eggchasers is where you can go and find that. And we done.
Let
the boys end.
Beautiful.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.